activity. He remains holed up in a military prison and had been denied legal representation to fight the charge. He was picked up in the summer of 2002 at Chicago's O'Hare Airport by FBI agents. Padilla, who converted to Islam and moved to Egypt, was returning home to visit his mother and son at the time of his arrest. The media has taken note of the Bush administration's handling of the Padilla case. Compared to former Taliban American-born John Walker Lynn, who's serving time on reduced charges after being picked up by American soldiers in Afghanistan 2 years ago. Padilla's mother is accusing the administration of having a double standard when handling her son's case. She contends Lynn got special treatment because his father's a lawyer and he's white. Even former President Bush, Father Bush, that is, described him as a poor, misguided Marin County hot tubber. Fallujah was the scene of renewed U.S. military activity with the bombardment of what has been described as the Sunni insurgent slum. The assault by U.S. warplanes came after American troops killed some 64 gunmen near the southern city of Najaf. Military expert and research fellow at the University of London has given his opinion on the current conflict in Fallujah. He's Dan Plesh, who during an interview this morning on CNN said the coalition forces have little option when battling the insurgents.
When people fire at you from a mosque, that their political objective is to get you to blow up the mosque. If you respond in simply in a forceful way, that is, you meet force with force, what you do is to deliver political victory to the other side.
Military expert Dan Plesh, you're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Planet Check. World-renowned reggae artist Pato Banton talks about Mama Nature.
The first track, Mama Nature, speaks for itself, really. The birds and bees, the plants and trees, the way that the leaders are treating the planet. For me, being aware and making people aware of the necessity to take care of the planet we live on is just as important as taking care of the house that you live in.
Pato talks about corporate responsibility.
I think there has to be a balance between the principles that major companies have and a balance between that and the profit margin that they need to gain to sustain themselves as a major company. But they have to tilt the scales in the direction of caring for this planet.
Words of wisdom from Pato Banton. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to CatMail.com, where environmentally conscious Americans get their internet access for free. CatMail.com, helping people and the planet.
Bush administration played hardball yesterday with the justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. This over Vice President Dick Cheney's work on a national energy strategy that he's been fighting to keep under wraps for 3 years. Solicitor General Theodore Olson told the justices that the president and vice president have a right to privacy under the Constitution. Despite this, environmental groups want the court to press on, claiming Cheney's records would show whether the energy industry got special access or favors. There's growing concern in New York about the level of protest activity expected at the upcoming Republican National Convention. New York law enforcement has been keeping a watchful eye on what's expected outside the event at Madison Square Garden, but concern is on the rise over the possibility that protesters may disrupt activities inside the garden. Observers say it's foregone that agents have already infiltrated the protest movement to undermine their activities. Protesters are now calling on those within their ranks to volunteer at the convention in a bid to gain access to the convention floor.
Daddy, why is the sky blue?
Well, because Mother Nature wanted to match your pretty little eyes.
Nope, not even close. See, all colors have wavelengths that are diffused by oxygen and nitrogen. Since blue has the shortest wavelength, it's diffused up to 10 times more. So the human eye sees more of it than any other color. That's why the sky looks blue, Daddy.
Who in the world taught you that?
Mommy?
By sixth grade, too many girls lose interest in math and science, and in just a few short years, almost all of the jobs they'll want will depend on having these skills. So keep her interest alive any way you can.
Daddy, do you know why the concept of odd and even is a philosophical illusion?
Why don't you tell me?
For more information and ideas, visit www.girlsgotech.org. Remember, it's her future. Do the math. A public service message brought to you by Girl Scouts of the USA and the Ad Council.
Hello.
Hello. This is Danny Glover.
Danny Glover?
I'm giving a wake-up call to every man in America. Mr. Johnson, did you know that at every age, American men have poorer health and a higher risk of mortality than women? Men experience higher instances of death due to hypertension, cancer, stress, HIV and depression. As a matter of fact, men live sicker and die sooner from all but one of the leading causes of death. We take more risks, handle stress differently, and are less likely to schedule checkups or to follow up when symptoms arise. If you really want to be a man and take care of your family, you can start by taking care of yourself. So schedule an appointment with a doctor and find out what might go wrong before it does.
I'll call today. And thank you.
You're welcome.
For more information, contact the W.K. Kellogg Foundation at WKKF.org.
There was dirt, water, and air. And it was good. Once, Planet Check.
Bush's new hydrogen tour? Don't believe the hype. Brendan Bell from Sierra Club's Global Warming and Energy Program uncovers the dirt.
Bush administration just announced that they're going on a six-city tour to promote their flawed hydrogen plan.
Instead of using clean, renewable energy sources like wind and solar power, the plan is to make hydrogen in the dirtiest way possible by using coal and nuclear power.
That's like putting on a nicotine patch that causes cancer. Bush administration should be putting 21st century technology to work instead of relying on 19th century outdated polluting technology to move us forward.
Get hip to hydrogen the green way. For all the 411, check out the Sierra Club's website at sierraclub.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, we'll preview what's coming up in the President's Day today. Today, well, yeah, the Presidential Day Planner. We have that every day. Plus, Sir Elton John does not like how the colonials are voting on American Idol. That's all coming up, but right now I'm joined by Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, people. How's everything doing? All right? Everything
sure.
All right?
Sure.
I didn't time my drugs properly this morning.
Uh-oh.
You know what I mean with the coffee? Like, I just started, like, I know this is going to be an everyday thing with me, and some people get irate with me, sort of festering on about Dunkin' Donuts coffee, but I just started drinking it before the show, but I drank it too early before the show. Like, I drank it, like, an hour and a half ago, and this always used to happen when I used to smoke cigarettes. Basically, what I would do is I'd get up in the morning, I'd have, like, a triple espresso, and I'd smoke, like, 7 cigarettes, and then I'd have to take a nap. You know, because my body would get exhausted just from processing the toxins I'd put into it, that I'd have to sleep. Like, and I kind of did that today. I did the Dunkin' Donuts coffee thing, and not like I had to, like, when I got here, I was like, ah! And now I'm like, ugh. So what I'm saying is,
you're saying that you peaked too soon.
I peaked a little too soon, and I found out it's true that Dunkin' Donuts does sell boxes of coffee. You can get a box of Joe. So I think tomorrow I'm going to get a box of Joe. Or if anybody from the higher ups at the Dunkin' Donuts corporate, headquarters hears this, please bring me a box,
Mr. Duncan. Perhaps?
Yeah, Mr. Duncan. And also on top of that, I got to read this voice piece by by James Ridgway, who says, Kerry must go. He says, with the air gushing out of John Kerry's balloon, it may be only a matter of time until political insiders in Washington face the dread reality that the junior senator from Massachusetts doesn't have what it takes to win and has got to go. And this guy is a liberal. He's a lefty. And this is exactly what I was talking about the other day, is this defeatist attitude. Yeah, that's a great idea, James. Let's pull the guy out right in the middle of the campaign. That'll make the Democrats seem really strong and together.
But you didn't read the second part.
I'm sorry. Let me read the second part.
He wants to replace Kerry with you.
Oh, yeah, that good idea. Great. You're going to need a really big staff of people.
Always good to aim for the center.
That's right.
Exactly. With growing issues over his wealth, which makes fellow plutocrat Bush seem like a charity case by comparison. In what way? Because his wife has $500 million, George W. Bush is George, H.W. Bush's son, and George H.W. Bush owns half the world with a collective of other people. So where's the comparison? The wealth is not a comparison. It just pisses me off because, he's a guy that people listen to, Ridgway is, and this is just one of those same sort of defeatist tones, like when you talk to liberal friends who are like, Bush is probably going to win it, but, I guess we we can. It's like, enough with that attitude. We just got to get Bush out of there, and Kerry's our best shot right now. What are you going to bring Dean back so we can have some other, you know, bipolar meltdown in public and make people, you know, question whether or not he can do it? He even suggests John Edwards. John
really?
Edwards.
But Edwards, did Edwards win one primary? No, he won his own home state. That's it.
Good for him. Wow, what a powerful politician.
Hey.
I mean, I'm not saying he won't be back and make a good stand for himself later, but you can't, you know, rally to have Kerry pushed out right now and think that's going to make anybody, you know, look stronger from the Democratic angle.
The problem with Ridgway's analysis, I think, is that the numbers actually favor Kerry if the numbers come out to vote. If women come out to vote, if black people come out to vote, if Latinos come out to vote, 75% of the electorate comes out to vote, Kerry wins easily.
And apparently if we get Cleveland, we've got a really good shot.
There you go.
Well, you know, clearly this guy's extreme, but he got some attention. I mean, that's the thing, what he's trying to provoke. But I think beneath that, he does have a point that I don't even know if he realizes he's making it. And that is the whole process of how someone becomes a Democratic candidate here just goes on for so long and is so much about huge amounts of money that, you know, in the end, maybe you do end up with a candidate who is just safe but is not inspiring.
I know, but it's like, who's...
I mean, it just speaks to one of the drawbacks in the American election process, and I, you know, that's the only valid thing that I think his hidden point that he unintentionally makes
and I also
speaks
think
to me, but apart from that, he's just clearly radical.
Right, but I think what you said was true, is that it might be more self-promotion than it is actually, you know, putting out some information
to
the world.
And we played right into his hands.
Yeah, but I think that's also a liberal problem. I think that narcissism destroyed the left, you know what I mean? It's like, because of lack of a collective ideology, everyone got really sort of like, but me, me, me. I mean, if narcissism were a political movement, we could really motivate people in this country. Just people with signs saying, how's my hair? You know, all right.
Your hair looks good.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting because this was one of the shortest primary seasons on record.
Yeah.
I mean, it was done in 3 months,
mm-hmm.
from January in Iowa to Super Tuesday in March, Kerry locked it up.
He just came out from nowhere, and I don't agree with Ridgway. I think this guy's got what it takes to be president. Whether he has the charisma that's necessary to make Ridgway feel something in his pants is not my problem.
Well, it's the same thing that people say about the Yankees. You know,
it's kind of early.
Winning.
I haven't had enough coffee for that comment.
The Yankees aren't winning. The Yankees aren't hitting. Break up the Yankees. Kerry isn't winning in the polls. But we got plenty of time.
Yeah, it's like, well, don't be a quitter, James.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of plenty of time, it may not issue a ruling until June, but published reports say most justices of the United States Supreme Court side with the Bush administration on its right to keep energy deliberation secret. The L.A. Times, in a story this morning, says two of the court's, quote, liberal justices appeared to agree with the administration's effort to overturn those two lower court rulings. The high court heard arguments yesterday with lawyers for both Judicial Watch and the Sierra Club, arguing the administration should name those outside government who helped shape the administration's energy policy. The task force in question was headed by the vice president, of course. Justice Antonin Scalia, the duck hunter, made no bones about his issue or his position on the issue.
Suppose I bring, instead of another government employee with me to give me advice, I bring a private individual with me to give me advice. Suddenly that private member becomes a private individual, becomes a member of the committee, even though a government agency?
It is certainly a plausible interpretation.
Not plausible to me.
Not plausible to him. You heard the man.
Could somebody with some ability to, you know, manage more than, like, you know, four or five thoughts in their head at once, or have an understanding of the narrative of judicial legislation and whatnot, explain to me exactly what he's saying?
He's saying essentially that if you bring people in from outside to serve on this energy task force,
right,
that means that the deliberations of the task force should not come under the purview of a court ruling. In other words, the court shouldn't decide whether or not the task force should or their deliberation should.
You mean as opposed to if outsiders weren't brought in, then
exactly. And this hinges on a ruling that was made in 1993 during Hillary Clinton's health care thing, where there was a question of whether or not, because she was criticized by Republicans for holding secret meetings, but she had no one from the outside involved.
I think that to make it even simpler is that you can safely ignore most of all of these details and just kind of look at this argument as a yet another example of the administration trying to tell everybody that nobody has the right ever to tell them what to do. That they can be secret, that the things just do not have to be part of the public record, and that you can let your head explode with facts and quotes and dates and rulings and predictions. But, you know, we know that there are people from the energy industry inside these meetings. It's not going to be a surprise to find out who they are.
Right. And the question was, were they dictating policy is the real issue.
Well,
right?
Just, how can we even ask the question? Look at the policy.
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
Of course they were. There's no way that they weren't.
And that's why California almost went bankrupt.
Well, I mean, that was the Bush administration's end game to begin with. They wanted to expand the nuclear thing. They wanted to expand fossil fuel exploration. They wanted to do all these things. They brought in people to buttress their pre-existing determination that this is what they were going
to
do.
And also to continue to deregulate and also privatize all energy industry within this country.
Absolutely. Now, what's interesting about this is that there were two justices, and forgive me, I will find out who they were, but two justices questioned whether the court should have even heard the case, because the appeals court, the second court that ruled on this, or actually issued a ruling on this, said they were not, they didn't have jurisdiction to hear it. So now there are two justices on the court who say, well, if the appeals court said they didn't have jurisdiction, why should we hear it?
But is there a constitutional, something constitutional in that the president is protected to have these type of meetings without the knowledge of the people? Isn't that what the argument is about?
That's their argument, yeah. Being put forward, by the way, by Theodore Olson.
And how come then that becomes moot if there are outside people in there, like you said before?
The Sierra Club is arguing that those outside people become de facto members of the task force.
So then it becomes something
so
that can
then
be argued.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it. Wow, man. Am I stupid or is this dense stuff?
No, it's just intended to distract us all from the fact that, you know, if you're George Bush, then no one can tell you what to do. Don't worry. You're intentionally confused.
That's why lawyers have jobs. Still ahead, Presidential Day Planner, Saddam gets a birthday visit, and more right here on Air America.
That every person who smokes pot and doesn't like it goes in the government?
Air America Radio, winning the war on drugs.
Your lawn is being taken over by dandelions and crabgrass.
Help!
With Weed Be Gone, one product gets rid of the dandelions,
but not the crabgrass.
The other kills the crabgrass,
but not the lawn weeds. There's gotta be a better way.
There is. Bayer Advanced All-in-One Weed Killer. It kills lawn weeds plus crabgrass in just one easy step, and it won't harm your lawn.
Two kinds of weeds, one simple solution.
Bayer Advanced. Better thinking, better results. Available at Lowe's and other garden retailers.
Success is all about what you drive. I couldn't wait to drive one of these babies, so I quit high school and went right to it. Hey, Mama.
Hey, yourself.
You like fast cars?
I really like this one.
You do?
Yeah, since it's mine.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Bringing it around for you.
Dropouts make 42% less money than graduates. Got questions? Get answers at OperationGraduation.com. Sponsored by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Hi there, my name is Mary. I'm 72 years old. I have 3 daughters, 4 granddaughters, a great-grandson, and Alzheimer's disease. I wasn't diagnosed too long ago, and while I'm not looking forward to what lies ahead, I'm afraid I'll be a burden on my children. Oh, of course, they say they're prepared to deal with it, but I still worry. So I call the Alzheimer's Disease Education and Referral Center for the Caregiver's Kit. It's got easy-to-read guides with tips for caring for people with Alzheimer's. Tips on eating, bathing, dressing, home safety, sleep problems, you name it, they've got practical advice on how to deal with it. So if you or someone you know has Alzheimer's disease, call 1-800-438-4380 for a free copy of the Caregiver's Kit. I did. And now I've got one less thing to worry about. That's 1-800-438-4380. This is a service of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Unfiltered.
Who doesn't believe that being in a relationship is indeed work? It should have protected rights. I think I found a way around the whole gay union.
But who do we negotiate with? Who do we do collective bargaining with?
Each other.
Liz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
Oh, God.
That's what a relationship is, Rachel. I can't believe yours has lasted 5 years not knowing this. Oops.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, here on Air America Radio. It is now 21 past the hour, and it's time for our exclusive look into President Bush's day planner for Wednesday, April 28th. But I just want to say James Woodroy is a provocateur. He's an agent provocateur. He may be on contract by the FBI. He's been set up, brainwashed. They put a chip in his head. I don't know, but he's working against us.
Okay.
Presidential date book for 4/28. That's today. 7 a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. Today's message, we're staying on message. 9:30 a.m. Presidential haircut. Inform presidential barber to make presidential eyebrows more presidential. And tell him he's getting fat. 10:30 a.m. Have the guy who makes up the jumble puzzle on the comics page declared an enemy combatant. Note, too hard. 11 a.m., meet with Swedish Prime Minister. Note to self, it's smorgasbord, not borgasmord. Noon, order soldiers to plant weapons in mosques. 12:15, attack mosques. 12:30, justify attack on mosques because weapons were there. 3 p.m., tell Laura that tonight, Lincoln bedroom will be Clinton bedroom. Yow! 5 p.m., ask staffer how Oval Office got its name. 9 p.m., bedtime emergency undersheet conference with the Secretary of Flashlights and Coloring Books. Ooh. Big day, challenging night for the leader.
Aren't they worried that when they get to the Clinton bedroom, it'll already be full of other women, and Laura might not be too happy about that.
Yeah, maybe that's
Barbara
the whole
plan. Barbara will be there writing her facts.
Yeah, maybe it'll be...
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I wonder if Clinton and I don't know.
No,
I'm just referring to the fact that she did stay over. Okay, I was, making.
It's not even a judgment on Clinton. The thought of anybody having sex with Barbara Streisand makes me uncomfortable.
Hey, she's a married woman, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she's married to James Brolin.
Yeah.
Well, she got herself a pretty good looking older guy.
Well, I mean, yeah. I'm sure they every now and then have a little.
Oh, I'm sure. No, there's no
connubial
doubt.
Connubial bliss.
There's no doubt. There's just something I find.
I'll bet you 250 Saddams.
Interior. There's one state.
Dinars.
Is that what they're called? Dinars? There's actually, we have an old Saddam dinar right here on the bulletin board.
On the bulletin board.
I've
yeah.
never seen one.
250. And that is his face.
Maybe we should send it to him. Today's his birthday. Send him a check or a little piece of currency that used to have his face on it.
Now, listen. I don't know why anybody cares.
Yeah.
But Elton John. You all know him, says the public voting on the hit TV show American Idol is, in his words, incredibly racist. John was a guest judge on the show this month. He wasn't the only person upset that black vocalist Jennifer Hudson was eliminated in that voting. Even host Ryan Seacrest, whose name I guess I'm supposed to know, reminded voters that Idol is a talent program and not a popularity contest. And you know what? I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care if Elton John thinks it's racist. I don't care if it actually is racist.
You just want it off.
It's reality television, and I want it to die.
Okay. Get it off.
Die yesterday.
Yeah.
Kill it. Yeah. Elton, you should never have been on it. What's that guy?
Trust me, Simon. Because I've been doing this a long time. You are not cut out for this.
I know.
why does Elton John, you know, lower himself?
I don't know why anyone. Look, my daughter, who's probably just waking up, she watches American Idol. She watched it last year. She watches it religiously. I don't know why anyone older than 7 watches American Idol.
That's fair enough.
Ghastly.
Who's this? That's not Elton.
That's
Elton's alter ego.
I completely understand why you think it's junk, why you don't want to watch it. I'm concerned that you're letting your daughter watch it, but you should care that it's racist. I mean, even if it's rubbish, even if it's stuff that you think that is, you know, brain death, if the, you know, millions of people watch it, you should still care that it's racist, even if you don't want to watch
it. But is the program...
I'm sorry, fight that fight, Mark. Fight it, baby, even though it's early in the morning.
I didn't care when Donald Trump got rid of the black guy. I knew he was going to do that.
But is the show racist, or are the 20 million people in America... You know, who are voting racist.
Well, see, here's the other side of it. Black people don't watch reality television.
That's a good point.
I mean, black people, statistically, there is not a single reality television show that is among the top 20 most watched shows by black people.
The weird thing is that it does show you that, you know, 20 million, that Americans who vote for American Idol, like, you know, heavy-set black men, but hot black women, they don't like. That makes them uncomfortable.
And see, now, of course, people are going to jump, you know, the Bill O'Reillys of the world. Well, wait a minute, Ruben Studdard won the last one. He got his recording contract. Who
that was
cares?
Pathetic.
Yes. That's what Ruben said. But hey, you know, first of all, what's the worth of this contract? What is the most that the winner will get out of a contract? $250,000?
And like a career that feels like a career that'll slowly trickle away, and then they'll just become sort of like old, sad people that, you know, were able to sing like somebody else for a few minutes and were rewarded for it.
Yeah,
exactly.
That was truly
They
pathetic.
Will become pathetic.
But see, how many freebies do each one of these contestants do? In other words, how many times do they sing for no pay whatsoever? For the shot at whatever this contract is.
I think that's the same issue with all reality shows.
They are fodder, all of them.
They'll work for, like, craft services. You know, is there something to eat there and will you give me a ride? I'll do it.
If I want to see reality, I watch Jerry Springer.
I think it makes everything mediocre. I think it lowers the bar on everything. When people who are, you know, are rewarded on talent shows and given record contracts, that means that people that are truly talented, visionary people are pushed aside. I believe that to be true because all these people that are on American Idol are rewarded for being mediocre ripoffs of other acts. And if that's the talent pool that we have to offer and those are the people that are rewarded, what about the tormented, bitter, really, you know,
really
kind of brooding people that are actually churning out some originality? It's already hard for them. They're hypersensitive. They're sort of broken inside. They're insecure. It's hard for them to get heard. But these polished, you know, idiots who can rip off other people's stuff and mock other people's way of doing things are rewarded, you know, in a big way. It screws the whole order up.
Do they sing
any? None of it's real. Reality. It's just this absurd. It's
a talent show. It's a talent show.
If you want to see reality, I go and sit in the park.
I don't know. Do they sing anything original? Do any of these people sing anything?
They're not encouraged to, I don't think. I don't watch it either, and I've never really seen the show, but I believe that they are encouraged or forced to sing other people's stuff and to sing it in a way. The way they judge things is how they, you know, they use the octaves of their voice and, you know, how much they can sound like Whitney or Mariah or how high they can take
it. It's hysterical. If you look at it just as a joke, you know, even if you don't last the whole show, it strikes me as an incredibly camp and also really embarrassing.
Well,
it's funny watching people degrading themselves to that extent. It's actually highly amusing. If you can see
it
as comedy, then it's actually worth tuning in.
But they encourage that, though. They do that. They put people on. They actually have another reality show showing auditions for American Idol, which is
right.
All about.
But they're
that
not
part.
Really laughing at themselves, are they?
No, people are laughing at them. And I think that maybe the inclusion of Elton John was meant to make it campier.
Well, they may have succeeded.
The weird thing about Elton John, though, as much as the guy is this sort of weird shameless self-promoter and kind of an you know, embarrassing in certain ways. I know every one of his songs. Every one of his songs. And like some of them actually, you know, make me cry. It's
Tumbleweed
sad.
Connection.
All those old albums.
All those old ones make me cry.
But even like I just like Goodbye Yellow Brick Road was a great record, man. There's
doubt. There was one thing he did at the very beginning of his career. Your song.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's a monument. Like, I'm surprised at how many I know in my head. It's like Beatles songs.
I had to part ways with him when he sang that hideous thing when Princess Diana died. That was just out and out embarrassing.
Oh, yeah.
But I do have the yellow vinyl.
All right.
That's almost embarrassing, isn't it? I think that was the first album I bought.
Okay, still ahead. Saddam's birthday visit. We've got the Dream Diary coming up, and it's all happening on Air America.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. With the Iraqi transfer of power just weeks away, the United Nations point man on Iraq, Lakhdar Brahimi, has recommended that anyone participating in the new caretaker government should be discouraged from political aspirations. Brahimi wants to kill any chance for political advancement by any unelected incumbent for next year's general election in Iraq. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice returns to Capitol Hill today to brief House Democrats on the war in Iraq, cost of the war, and the issue of depleting manpower bound to be up for discussion. Republican Party leadership is working with law enforcement to thwart any possible disruption or violence at the upcoming GOP convention in New York. This is the protest movement is encouraging its ranks to sign up as convention volunteers. And a published report this morning says Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry may pick a ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. California Congresswoman Jane Harman is his running mate. 58-year-old Democrat is widely admired for her knowledge of foreign policy, defense, and terrorism issues. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Seeking partner. I am unattractive, sedentary, bulbous, single red polyp, looking for middle-aged colon. Interests include hanging out on intestinal walls, growing, becoming a disease, seek male or female companion. I swing both ways.
Colon polyps have absolutely no redeeming qualities, and worst of all, they can lead directly to colon cancer. Get the polyp early and stop colon cancer before it even starts, and that's both for men and women.
If you're unhealthy and middle-aged, let's get together and see what happens.
Just get a test from your doctor.
Serious inquiries only. And no doctors, please.
Colon cancer. Get the test, get the polyp, get the cure. For more information, call 1-800-ACS-2345 or visit cancer.org. A public service message brought to you by the American Cancer Society, the Ad Council, and this station.
Good morning to you. Welcome to Air America Radio's Mornings Edition. I am Mark Maron. This is Mark Riley with me and Sue Ellicott. I'd like you to say hello to them as
well.
Hello.
Good morning.
With both campaigns focusing on each man's qualifications to serve as the military's commander-in-chief, Air America has put together a special series focusing on what each man was doing at that point in American history when their country needed them most. Here is the first of our three-part series.
To better understand the men who would be our leaders, Air America takes a closer look at the events that shaped their lives.
February 28, 1969. John Kerry and his boat crew come under attack while patrolling the Mekong Delta. In the middle of the ensuing firefight, Kerry leaves his boat, pursues a Viet Cong fighter into a small hut, kills him, and retrieves a rocket launcher. He is awarded a Silver Star. On that same day, half a world away, young George Bush is fascinated with a new country variety show called Hee Haw and the musical stylings of Mr. Roy Clark. He briefly considers a career as a guitar-playing hillbilly comedian with the stage name Snap Pea.
Two men, two lives. Now you, the voter, must decide. Really think about it, though.
Snappy.
We'll continue that with part two in the next hour. But right now, we're going to focus on today's news, Sue.
Okay, Iraq. Just when you thought it was safe, maybe, to actually believe the U.S. military that they might hold back on some kind of all-out offensive and persuade frustrated and angry Iraqis that the Americans are liberators, not occupiers, maybe with, say, electricity, security, diplomacy. A huge American attack aimed at crushing Iraqi rebels has brought us to a defining moment in the war, a standoff that's been a year in the making and which now risks provoking ever more and worse bloodshed. We've had the ceasefire that was very fragile in the city of Fallujah west of Baghdad, broken U.S. aerial gunship pounded targets on Monday night. And now the fears are that where goes Fallujah, there goes Iraq, that Fallujah is kind of really the intractable problem. And in the holy city of Najaf, watched over by 2,500 U.S. troops, U.S. airborne gunships have wiped out 64 members of the militia belonging to the renegade Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr in the bloodiest encounter since the preacher launched his revolt against the U.S. occupation 3 weeks ago. Now, it seems as though this is really at an incredibly crucial point. We've got numbers. Have you seen the numbers that came out that, you know, yesterday? For the month of April alone, 115 U.S. soldiers have been killed. That's the same number as the total number of U.S. military killed in the efforts to get rid of Saddam Hussein last year in the ground war. And that around 1,200 Iraqis, even allowing for some confusion about accuracy, have been killed over the last month. Now, I don't see how the stepping up of attacks in Fallujah especially, and in Najaf, which is the holy city, can do anything other than increase the Iraqi opposition to the U.S. military, to further alienate Iraqis from their would-be liberators, and raise even more questions about whether there is any strategic thinking at all on the part of the Bush administration in this post-war period. It just seems like such a mess. Why can't they just go in now? If they need to neutralize Muqtada al-Sadr, they said that they will arrest him. This is, you know, fanning all of the frustration among poor Iraqis, has united the Shias and the Sunnis, north and south. Don't they need to give some kind of incentives? I mean, clearly they're frustrated. They don't think just sitting down and talking is going to work. But if it's the fact that the very militant minority are dominating what's going on in Iraq and causing a silent majority to either stand back or pick up arms in sympathy, can't they just sit down and go, okay, let's just do some kind of deal. How about that we figure out how to clear the sewage from your streets? Where it's 1 foot deep, apparently, in Sadr City, raw sewage. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't actually giving some kind of hygiene, electricity, and safety to Iraqis neutralize the animosity towards the Americans?
I don't know if they're going to negotiate with al-Sadr because they've said he's, you know, he has an illegal militia and they're going to arrest him if they can get their hands on him. So I don't know if he's the one they can negotiate with. Maybe Sistani, who is the leading Shiite cleric, might be somebody, and they've been talking with him. But they're over a barrel in Fallujah. They're in deep trouble in Fallujah because they have a lot of the insurgents apparently have holed up inside mosques. And if the Americans hit the mosque,
that's bad.
Then it creates a whole huge.
But this sewage issue,
though. They did hit a minaret yesterday.
Yeah.
On purpose?
They said it was being used by a sniper.
Yeah.
They showed it on CNN last night.
But isn't most of the Iraqi, what you call the silent Iraqi majority, aren't they, you know, frightened to even come out of their house? I mean, we talked to somebody who said that so many people are so afraid to get caught in the crossfire that they're not even engaging.
Right. Many people are inside, but what's happened is that, you know, particularly kind of young men and, you know, kind of angry people who are kind of feeling disenfranchised are taking up arms, and that the people who you might think would be kind of reasonable and don't want violence are not doing anything to prevent it because they feel that it's been a year now. There's been this big turning point.
So they're actually against the Americans on some level as well.
Yes, I think because it seems to be a big sort of miscalculations by the U.S. military and confusion and between the U.S. Marines and the Army, especially on kind of how tough to be. And I think that what you'd think would be the silent, reasonable majority are so angry that women and children and civilians have been killed with what seems to be very trigger-happy U.S. forces over the last 3 weeks in particular.
In the chaos.
They're like, well, we don't want to get involved, but if you want to take up arms and you go and fight our battle for us, we're not going to stop you.
Now, in Fallujah, this is a Sunni militant group, right?
Yeah.
And in Najaf, these are a Shiite fanatical military faction
right.
Under al-Sadr's, the new breakout villain.
But see, the American troops are not fighting the same battle in Fallujah and Najaf. In Najaf, they have consciously avoided hitting mosques, even if they do. And supposedly, the Shiites are not...
Because that'll flare up more.
Do you know what's very clever? I found out
that
in Najaf, that al-Sadr, where he is holed up, is right next door to al-Sistani and right opposite a mosque. So he is in this fantastic place that is very, very hard to hit.
So do you think Sistani is just, he's holding out to see how this settles so he can sort of eventually step in as a diplomatic spiritual leader?
I think that people seem to be a little bit disappointed in what his role is at the moment.
Which is nothing, in some sense.
I think he doesn't want to condone the violence, but I think that they are... He wants a... He wants a secular democracy, doesn't he? He does not want an Islamic government to take over.
I think he wants to make
sure that everybody is arguing about what they should have.
I really think he's holding out to navigate with the new governing council, whoever that is, that he'd be the main dude.
That is the problem. And you really got to put yourself in the position of an Iraqi who goes to a mosque,
right?
Okay, in Fallujah, want to worship. And suddenly they find out on the roof of the mosque is a sniper, and that sniper makes the mosque an American target. I mean, it's an incredible situation. Of course, people are going to deeply resent their inability to exercise their religion as far as they're concerned. Now, how many people do you think in Iraq are marking today? Because today
It is Saddam Hussein's birthday, his 68th, I believe, birthday.
67th.
67th. And I wonder if the American troops knew that before they went and attacked. Do you think that they did? They said, you know, not only are we
going to... I don't think anybody
knows. I doubt it.
Am I the only conspiracy guy that thinks I am?
But wouldn't it be great if someone could get organized with some kind of justice? Bring him to trial fast. Make it look as though that you have security and the Iraqi people's best interests under control. Stop making them nostalgic for the days of Saddam Hussein when at least they said they could go out on the streets and it was safe and they had electricity.
There's
and
no traffic.
Their sewage wasn't flowing 1 foot deep raw through their streets.
Well, I guess a lot of that is whether that the Americans can build a new infrastructure is sort of hampered by the fact that there's constant warfare and chaos going on. Certainly no one's going to go out and work on the sewer if they're afraid they're going to get their head blown off.
They should be able to. I mean, at a time when they are trying to figure out, you know, how to get more troops in. I mean, the big thing now, the big military problem, which is, butting right up against the political problems, is how to get more troops in, how to get more National Guard, how to, they surely can say, listen, guys, sorry this didn't go as smooth as we thought, but, we're going to get in thousands of people now, and we are going to fix your streets, we are going to get your lights on, we are going to, give you sanitation.
Well, they tried
that. I think
that.
That's the only thing. They need to sit al-Sadr down and promise that they can do that and show that they can deliver. Give some kind of incentives to get the militants to back off. Nothing is going to happen unless they have incentives.
Yeah, right. That guy's a reasonable guy.
No, the first incentive would have to be, we'll let you open your newspaper again.
Yeah,
that's what triggered all
this. He doesn't care. American businesses are leaving Iraq. I mean, GE left. Siemens left. I mean, they can't even navigate the situation. I just don't see that guy as being a reasonable guy. He's very self-promoting, and he really wants to be the leader of Iraq. Call us at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We want to talk about what James Ridgway said about Iraq, and we'll put you on the line when you call. So call us here at Air America.
Air America Radio. Welfare State Radio. Wait, who put this in here?
Hello, this is Danny Glover. I'm giving a wake-up call to every man in America. At every age, men have poorer health and a higher risk of mortality than women. We take more risks, handle stress differently, and are less likely to schedule checkups or to follow up when symptoms arise. If you want to be a man and take care of your family, see a doctor and find out what might go wrong before it does.
For more information, contact the W.K. Kellogg Foundation at WKKF.org.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, we love it when the music does the talking.
And the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
At Volunteers of America, we don't just give kids a way to stay off the streets. We give them the tools they need to reach their full potential. We don't just help the elderly receive needed care. We help them live life to the fullest. We don't just provide food for homeless individuals and families. We provide job training and placements so they can buy groceries. Volunteers of America is a national organization that for over 100 years has provided programs and services that allow people to overcome their challenges to become vital members of their community. At Volunteers of America, we don't just help people, we help people help themselves. Find out how you can support the programs that are working in your community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089. That's 1-800-899-0089.
Hey, this is Darius Rucker and the boys from Hootie and the Blowfish. We have an important message for you. If you're an adult, 21 or over, it's fine to have a drink while you're enjoying an evening with good friends. What's not right is overdoing it. When you drink too much, you're probably not quite as much fun as you think.
Yeah, if you do drink, please do it responsibly. If you go out with a group and there's going to be drinking, have a designated driver. Don't you think, Dino?
Mark is right. The good news is that the most recent statistics show that underage drinking is declining. They also show the lowest levels of traffic deaths involving alcohol since they started keeping track.
But we can all do more, Dean. It's Sony, asking you to remember that we all need to do our part by drinking responsibly and keep things going in the right direction.
This message is brought to you by the members of the National Beer Wholesalers Association, committed to encouraging responsible consumption of its products. The Majority Report.
You pronounce my name Janine's co-host.
Are you two sleeping together or what?
No.
Okay. But we were talking before.
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
I don't know why we had to.
No.
Sweet God, no.
No. I don't believe you now. I think you are, but.
I'm turning red.
Air America's Majority Report. Weeknights 8 to 11 on Air America Radio.
Forty-six past the hour. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley. Give us a call at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. You can email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. We want to talk about the liberal sort of defeatist attitude exemplified by James Ridgway in The Voice. I will read the beginning of that piece in a moment. But right now I'd like to share my dream diary on the advice of my therapist to keep a daily dream diary because too much stuff in my head with this job. Okay, so here's today's dream diary. I'm in the studio. I'm right here. I'm doing the show in my dream, right? But instead of the two of you guys, instead of Mark Riley and Cialcott, there are two more of me. And there's a me in the booth. And I guess I'm also at home listening to me and me and me. And I'm killing laugh after laugh. I mean, what a good audience I am. I kill me. There's one guy in the audience, though, not laughing. He's yelling at me, calling me a hack. And I realize it's Charlie Kaufman, the film director. So I'm doing the dream diary, and somehow I know it's weird because I'm dreaming about remembering about dreaming about remembering, and I'm starting to get really confused when suddenly this figure in a white lab coat and a polished aluminum orb for a head bursts in, and he says, "I see you," in this weird robot voice, and I go, "Get out, this is my playhouse," and then two other me's go, get out. "I see you," it says again. I said, "No, you don't. I'm invisible. You'll never catch me," I say, and I start running through a tunnel filled with silver fog and then into a room full of mirrors. "I see you," says the voice, which totally freaks me out. And I try to run, but I keep smashing into a reflection of myself until all the mirrors are streaked with my blood, which is orange and singing. I don't even know how that's possible. So I wake up, and my bed is filled with Pez. What does it mean, man? We're going to have a guy later who's going to analyze some of my dreams. Now, we're taking some calls. We have got George in Long Island. George.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Well, all right. Once I survive the personal issue, important issues of how much somebody misses his wife and somebody has a pussycat lick his face, but once I get into real issues, I'm under the rug.
You're listening to me, aren't you, George?
Well, I have to listen, but at 89, you know, I got to push things up a little bit. I can't wait for the. But let me get a little serious.
Okay, let's be serious.
For the longest time, I've known, but I've gotten to know, unfortunately, even more, how complex the Iraqi population is. We know that the Shiites consist the majority who've been put down, who now want to rule. They are divided. Then you have the Sunnis. Then you have the support of Saddam Hussein. And you have a nation of 25 million people who are an Islam nation. They have no more desire and no more understanding of democracy than the man on the moon. Now, the one thing they're united on is that, for instance, when we ask their troops to come in and who have been trained to help support us, they refuse. They don't want to shoot each other. They want us out no matter how much good we're doing.
So you're saying no matter what, no matter what we do at any cost, that we're an imposition on the Iraqi people of all kinds.
Yes, because you can have 150,000 troops, but out of those, let's say you have maybe even half to be liberal.
Okay.
We really do the fighting. You can't control the rest of the people.
Thank you very much for your call, George. I appreciate you listening. Yeah, I think he's got a point. I think you were talking about that, weren't you, Sue? A bit about
probably. You said so many things. I'm sure I was talking about all of them.
He's a good listener, except the pussycat. I didn't mention that.
He's paying close. But you know what? He forgot to talk about the Kurds.
Yeah.
And the Kurds have really have yet to be heard from. They're up in the north.
Yeah.
They want sovereignty is their end game, and the Turks. They're not so nice neighbors, really don't want to see that happen. And that hasn't exploded yet, but it might.
But the reason that they're quiet is that they're kind of safe because they know that they have U.S. protection. I mean, the U.S. went in to protect them when they were being bombed by Saddam Hussein's forces back in the early 90s. And the reason that they haven't got involved and they haven't been drawn into the fight against the Americans with the Sunnis and the Shias is that they are just kind of holding tight and they don't feel threatened by the U.S. forces.
But
they want some kind of role in a multi-part parliament or government, but... they don't seem to have a big issue about the U.S.-led coalition.
But they're giving up on Kurdistan?
We left them hanging a bit, though, too.
Yeah, we did. In the early 90s, we did kind of sort of leave.
Let's take Mike from Long Island. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Good, man. What's on your mind?
I was just thinking about what Sue said before about bringing water and electricity and cleaning up the sewers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Why don't they do that on a smaller scale in... other small towns and let the word spread, and get a radio station on where people can voice their opinions, pro or con, and let the newspapers print what they need to, pro or con. And eventually people will see, we're not trying to rule them with an iron fist. And
we're actually bringing democracy. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Air America is actually in negotiations for a couple of stations in Baghdad and Najaf.
Like but, he makes an interesting point. But what you have to understand is that the bringing of plumbing and electricity and all this has been political from the minute that America actually started
even
occupying
before,
the country.
Even before. They're fought after contracts by, global companies.
But, even more than that, what they do is they electrify the villages whose leadership is most friendly to the United States.
Who's on board.
So if you're the head of a village and you're not partial to the invasion, then you don't get the plumbing. You don't get the electricity. You don't get these things done as quickly as people who are more compliant. Now, obviously they have enough infrastructure so they talk among these villages, and I think that also ends up building a level of resentment in all this.
Call us at 866-303-AARO. That's 866-303-2270. Sarah, good morning.
Sarah? I'm trying to smile because I'm really upset and angry. Yesterday and last night I finished the book, the Craig Unger book.
God, isn't that heavy?
It's like too much. And then the double whammy this morning, the New York Times, the first thing that I read is Cheney in the courts, and Scalia has the nerve to not only not recuse himself, but to speak and to say he's like disturbed or something about a decision where Cheney might have to, give up his privacy.
Right, they're all gonna vote, with the White House on this one. It looks like
all of them.
Not all of them. Actually, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and David Souter are the two justices that have questioned whether or not the court should even be hearing this, and maybe they'll write that in a dissent. But obviously Scalia is a homer, and his comments yesterday kind of bear that out.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Sarah. Yeah, she sounded pretty concerned. It is kind of disturbing.
Pretty upset.
Yeah, pretty upset. Well, that Unger book, if you read about the Bushes and the Saudis, is like, it's just mind-blowing that more attention isn't paid to that corrupt relationship on a day-to-day basis.
But the Saudis have the secret weapon. Prince Bandar.
Prince Bandar and his magical sword. Bandar has made the Bushes his bitches. Prince Bandar, the powerful. Brian, Maybrook, New York. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, guys.
Hey, man.
What's up?
Well, I wanted to point out two things that are really bothering me about this. First of all, the hypocrisy that Cheney has in his approach with this versus the way the Republicans went after the health care task force that Clinton had put together in 93.
Absolutely.
And following on that is the fact that the mainstream media doesn't report that at all, doesn't take the right wing to task for the total disregard they have for the precedents that they set. And on top of that, why are we not having prominent left wing public figures, pundits, politicians, countering and debunking these outrageous right-wing claims at every turn?
You mean on national television?
Sure.
Like, who would you recommend? I mean, in your mind, who would be the most effective left-wing political pundits to do that?
Well, the first person I'd want to get on the case is Ted Kennedy. He had a great attack against the garbage that the right wing is spewing about Kerry.
He was great. He was all worked up. Wasn't that exciting?
You should have him out there every freaking day, because Lord knows the right wing is going to give him enough material to debunk, to keep him doing that as a full-time job.
I think you're right.
I think, but the problem is, Brian, is that the Democrats are very worried about putting out somebody who is seen as a liberal in a kind of a left-wing sense, and not liberal as intolerant, but you know, this is all about the center. This election in American politics is about the center, and anybody who seems as though they're kind of a soft, mushy, you know, unlimited spending kind of liberal, Ted Kennedy, they don't want him out as the rebutter to all of this stuff, because they think he's too much of a liability.
Well, there's also a lot of backroom stuff that's going on within the Kerry campaign. In fact, Mary Beth Cahill, who is Kerry's campaign manager, is from the Ted Kennedy camp. And there are a number of different camps within the larger Kerry campaign that are vying for influence.
But also, I think Kennedy, he was really great when he showed up a week or so ago.
No, he's a great speaker. He's powerful. He's energetic. It's just that he represents something that the Democrats... They don't really want to kind of face up to it. They don't want it to seem as though it's a significant part of the party, because it's all about trying to kind of keep things slightly right of center and slightly left of center. Well, except that, you know, for the Republicans, it's far more than slightly right of center. It's very right of center.
Right.
But the Democrats want to reposition themselves even more than Bill Clinton did, to be centrists.
Right. Bill, Baton Rouge. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I wanted to raise a point here. I've been saying this from the beginning. You know, the invasion of Iraq was all fun and games until we tell them they can't vote. And
that's what's happening now.
Well, it's not even going to happen now. It's going to happen in January, when either Chalabi's going to run against 1,000 candidates and he's going to win with 1,000 votes, or Sistani's going to handpick a Shia nationalist, a secular Shia nationalist, to run against him. And what are we going to do? We're going to turn on Sistani.
I think that the administration is going to find a way of buttoning up Chalabi fairly swiftly, because they know he's a liability. I think, you know, he won't even be a factor come January.
I think you're right. Thank you very much for your call.
All right. Coming up, Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Anthony Lewis looks at the stakes in yesterday's Supreme Court arguments. Mark Maron has Wednesday's morning devotional, plus John Kerry's Big Bucks haircut, when we continue here on Air America Radio.
Mothers and daughters bond. Others are crazy glued. And now there's a new play about mothers and daughters that'll bring you to tears of laughter from door to door. The Daily News Raves from door to door is hilarious and deeply moving. It weaves the stories of three generations of Jewish women together with great artfulness. From door to door is a funny and heartfelt play that stirs up 65 years of family secrets and surprises. From the Cossacks to Ellis Island, from overmothering to single parenting. The Journal News calls from door to door a sweet play that glows with love and timeless values. It's beautifully performed, cheers the New York Post. And the Star Ledger applauds, it's like plunging into a bowl of your grandma's chicken noodle soup. See From Door to Door by James Sherman, directed by Joe Brancato, at the West Side Theater. Call telecharge.com, 212-239-6200. WOR's Joan Hamburg says, you'll enjoy it from door to door.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York.
the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America, we've got writer Anthony Lewis on all the hot, steamy action in the Supreme Court. Plus, we'll have the morning devotional and Recovery Corner. All that and much more, but first, the headlines.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The nation's high court considers the controversial case of Jose Padilla today. He's a Chicago native of Latino heritage who turned Muslim and moved to Egypt but was arrested 2 years ago for suspicion of being a dirty bomber. His arrest, brought to the world's attention by U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft, has been the source of Bush administration controversy since there's been no definitive evidence linking him to any crimes. Padilla's plight and that of 600 foreign-born detainees remain at the center, say civil libertarians, of the administration's dismissal, that is, of justice and civil rights in pursuit of the war on terror. Fallujah was the scene of renewed U.S. military activity with the bombing of a Sunni insurgent stronghold yesterday. The assault by U.S. warplanes followed the killing of 64 insurgents by American troops outside the Jaf. Military expert and University of London research fellow Dan Plesh says many experts are in sharp disagreement with the American military tactics in Fallujah.
It really isn't acceptable to reply to incoming mortar fire with an artillery barrage into the neighborhood where the mortars have come from, particularly if the guys with the mortars have just slung their weapon in the back of a pickup truck and are long gone before the incoming artillery gets there, and the people on the receiving end are simply civilians.
Military expert Dan Plesh. Iraq's caretaker government must be chosen by the end of May so it can properly prepare to take power a month later, says UN envoy for Iraq, Lakhdar Brahimi. President Bush has so far been supportive of Brahimi's plans for the new Iraqi government, though the envoy has increasingly been speaking out against U.S. military tactics in the country. Syria is a scene of violence. Gunmen attacked a former United Nations office in the diplomatic quarter of Damascus that set off a battle with police. Nearby buildings were pelted with bullets and grenades. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Welcome to Classes on Tape.
Okay.
Let's begin. Open your color-coded guidebooks to the yellow section.
Yellow.
Encouraging phrases. Ready?
Oh, wait. I don't have my...
Now, repeat the following phrase. Son, you did great on that test.
Son.
I'm so proud of you.
Oh, son, you did great on that test.
How did you do? Try it again.
Son, you did great on...
Again.
Son, you did great on that... Wait. Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you. Son, you did great on that test. I'm so proud of you.
Hey, Dad. How's it going?
Son, you're so proud. And that's a great test.
It's really not that difficult. In fact, encouraging your kids to stay in school is something every parent can do.
I've got the power!
Talk to them. Encourage them. Get them to graduate. Don't drop out on your kids. For a free brochure, call 877-4KID. That's 877-FORAKID.
I've got the power!
This message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Democrats in Congress will push for stronger criminal penalties for employers who commit safety violations that result in worker death. Legislation is on the table that would increase the maximum prison sentence for willful safety violations that cause deaths. New York Times, in an analysis of 2 decades of safety inspection data, identified over 2,100 workers whose deaths were the result of willful safety violations. And all their employers faced $106 million in civil fines and jail sentences totaling less than 30 years. America's top investigator is under investigation himself. U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft is facing allegations of campaign finance violations. Justice Department's Public Integrity Section is reviewing the charges based on information from the Federal Election Commission. At issue is the fundraising list that then-Senator Ashcroft used during his 2000 re-election campaign. In December, the FEC determined that Ashcroft's political action and campaign committees had committed at least 4 campaign law violations. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kix Brooks.
I'm Ronnie Dunn.
And we're Brooks.
And Dunn for Rad. And I've got a 4-letter word for you. Don't. As in, don't drive drunk.
Yep, and I got a 3-letter word for you, as in, get. Get the keys.
When you see someone who's about to drive under the influence,
get the keys.
Because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
My heart is lost.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Adding fractions is nothing.
For real?
Look.
These are denominators. You multiply this one so that it's the same as that, then you add them up.
Man, that's easy.
Charles Bennett dreamed of returning to the old neighborhood as a teacher, but without money for college, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A message from the UNCF and the Ad Council.
Weeds, like dandelion and clover, can stand between you and a thick green lawn. That's why Bayer Advanced created Triple Action Lawn Fertilizer Plus Weed Control. It kills four times as many types of weeds as the leading brand and feeds at every level, the grass, the roots, plus it fortifies the soil for a thicker, deep down green that lasts longer. Without the weeds, guaranteed. Bayer Advanced. Better thinking, better results. Save up to $23 when you purchase the Bayer Advanced Fertilizer Program. Available at Lowe's and other garden retailers. Or visit BayerAdvanced.com for details.
Well, good morning, everybody. Will you parents please settle down so I can take the classroom attendance? Thank you. Okay, here we go. Brittany's mom and dad.
Present.
Present.
Justin's mom.
Present.
Lisa's dad. I said Lisa's dad. Well, maybe he's on his way. I hope he makes it. Lisa really needs his support. You know, your life can be hectic, but that's really no excuse. You have to get involved in your child's education. It will make a difference, believe me, whether it's checking homework or visiting with the teacher. Be present in your child's classroom. There's always a seat open with your name on it. Well, look who just showed up. Lisa's dad.
Yes, I made it. Present.
There are many ways to get involved in your child's school. Discover how. Call 1-800-281-1313. Or visit www.schoolsuccessinfo.org. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and Partners for Public Education, a partnership for the NAACP and People for the American Way Foundation.
Daddy, why is the sky blue?
To match your pretty eyes.
Nope. See, all colors have wavelengths that are diffused by oxygen and nitrogen. Since blue has the shortest wavelength, it's diffused up to 10 times more.
Who taught you that?
Mommy.
By sixth grade, too many girls lose interest in math and science, which they'll need for most future jobs. Keep her interest alive. For ideas, go to girlsgotech.org. It's her future. Do the math. A public service message brought to you by Girl Scouts of the USA and the Ad Council.
Hi, Mark Maron here, along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 7 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, I'll have our morning devotional. Plus, does Matt Drudge want a return of Haircut Gate? Didn't the nation endure enough during the first one? That's all ahead, but right now I've got with me Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott.
Hey.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Yo.
And that was a good morning to Chris, too, our board operator. Chris, I got...
And resident stud.
Yes, definitely. A lot of conversation down in the downtime.
Why are you looking at me when you say that, Riley?
I didn't say that. I didn't look.
You did. You glanced over. Okay, yeah, he is. Huh? I'm vouching for him.
Plus,
you know what? He called the other day and asked if I wanted milk with my coffee. And he was at the deli, and he wanted to know if we needed milk.
Oh,
that's the way to my heart.
A testament to his chivalry or a testament to your prima donna-ness?
Oh. No, just my need for coffee at 4 in the morning.
No, that's actually a new thing for all of us. Sue wasn't drinking coffee initially, and then you started drinking it. Because we started, like, it also, the reality started to settle in, like, we can't just do this on tea.
Bro.
I was trying it on water. That was a real no-no.
Yeah, you were just drinking, I was drinking tea at least. But here's the weird thing this morning, I don't know why I was addressing this to Chris, but I got, because I'm not complaining about getting up early, but I'm starting to think that all the drinking I did in my lifetime, and even all the drinking I did in drugs I did in high school and on, was not as damaging as listening to, like, you know, the radio. I got this, the radio. Here, let me explain. I'm waking up at 2 in the morning, and every day I got nothing in my head but some weird old song that I don't even know where it comes from. I woke up this morning, I had Fooled Around and Fell in Love by Elvin Bishop in my head. What is that?
That's a sign of having done too many drugs, and you're paying for it now.
No, I think it's actually a sign of something else. I think what's more insidious is classic hit stations. Or else, maybe it's the mercury in my salmon. I eat a lot of salmon, and I'm starting to think that because of the mercury intake, that it's actually because all the mercury in my brain is receiving a classic hit station. Now, all I'm asking is if there's anybody out there who knows about this, about the possibility of those metals, precious metals in my head, picking up radio signals, is can I change the channel?
No, this
is there
like,
some way I can get some other channel?
This sounds like letters.
No, this is sounding like the Partridge Family episode when whatever her name was had some metal foil in her teeth and she's picking up noises in her head.
Is it
Billings? She's getting a radio station. Exactly.
That's what it was. I can't understand. Like yesterday it was Bob Seger, Night Moves. And they're all the songs that I grew up with. You know, and I wish I was kidding about this.
He's returning to childhood.
Wait a minute.
It's kind of cute.
Do you set your dial to an oldie station when you go? Because
I don't have that. I don't have a radio, man.
His
brain is set to an oldie station. That's the bigger worry.
I woke up. I was going, fooled around and fell in. What is that?
You know what it is?
When was the last time you heard that?
It's called
middle age crisis.
No, I'll tell you exactly what that is. That's those 20-year-old toxins leaving your body. Between 2 and 2:30
every
morning.
They have to leave in the form of an Elvin Bishop song?
Absolutely.
That's their farewell song?
Haven't you checked out your own dream diary?
It's just all the toxins are wearing overalls and a cowboy hat with little Stratocasters.
Yep.
It's like Bishop. Mark's version of a high colonic.
Ooh.
Colonic, as my friend Paul Krasner once said, a colonic is an enema with an ideology. Which is brilliant. We ought to get Krasner on the show, man. He's an old satirical warrior.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of ideology, the United States Supreme Court has a lot on its plate this session. Of course, it is deciding if Dick Cheney's secret meetings with his friends in the energy business will remain secret. And it's also taking up the thorny issue of just who is an enemy combatant. On the energy issue, however, if published reports are to be believed, the court's decision is already a done deal. At least one justice has gone on the record. That would be, of course, Antonin Scalia. And he left little question about where his sentiment lies, actually where his sentiments lie. For him, it comes down to this.
If I bring somebody else from my agency with me, I expect all of these cabinet members didn't come to the meetings alone. They certainly had assistants with them. Were those assistants members of the committee?
Certainly not. They didn't lose the exemption, Your Honor, because they were full-time government employees.
I'm not asking whether they lost the exemption. I'm asking whether they were members of the committee. And the answer has to be no.
Of course, Justice Scalia was arguing with Alan Morrison, who's an attorney for the Sierra Club, and apparently a friend of his. He's friends with everyone.
Is there nobody he doesn't like?
Scalia likes to argue with his friends.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked to Leahy yesterday. Senator Patrick Leahy. They're friends, but Leahy wrote a letter, you know, calling saying that he should recuse himself, and we talked to him about that hunting trip. Do we have that thing? Do we have that sound?
Do we have that sound from the hunting trip?
Chris? No.
Nope. That's all right. We'll get in later.
But was that Scalia, you know, trying to sound kind of tough and reasonable because he's been under such criticism for going on that duck hunting trip with Cheney? I mean, do you think he was playing to the crowd yesterday?
He sounded like a homer. I mean, he sounded like Phil Rizzuto at
a Yankee. He loves to argue, that guy. Everything I've read about him is that, you know, just as a hobby, he loves to argue.
But that's the legal brain, right? And that's the point that he's made, with, you know, why he is not compromised by having gone on the duck hunting trip with Cheney and how he can hear impartially the case about the energy task force, because he's only going to think about it in terms of the, you know, is intellectual application of the law.
It's a separation between job and fun.
Yes, between his brain and the rest of the world.
You know who is never, ever quoted on the record about their opinions in any of these cases? Any of them. Doesn't matter. Name one justice that you never hear about.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
Nah, she's quoted every year.
Well, you know what? We've got a professional here. We wanted to get some expert analysis.
Who? You can tell us?
Huh? I know Anthony Lewis knows this already. I can tell you who it is.
Well, then hold it. Let's see if he'll
guess it. All right, let's see if he knows.
All right. We wanted to get some expert analysis of yesterday's Supreme Court action, so we've got with us writer Anthony Lewis, formerly of the New York Times and most recently in Mother Jones, joining us today. How are you, Anthony Lewis?
I'm fine, thanks.
I think Mark Riley has a question for you right off the bat.
Well, Anthony Lewis, I was just curious. What Supreme Court justice do you almost never hear a quote from when it comes to these kinds of hearings like they had yesterday?
Clarence Thomas.
Bingo! Clarence Thomas.
No, that was a setup.
No, he knew, because Clarence Thomas almost always follows whatever Antony Scalia says.
We should get into that in a minute. So Anthony Lewis, in the Cheney case, the dispute is an important election year test of how much the White House can shield the executive branch from public, congressional, and judicial scrutiny. What did yesterday's oral arguments reveal?
It revealed that this is a very complicated case, which will be seen by the public in exactly the terms you just said. Did the administration win in its right to keep everything secret from the public and the judiciary and Congress and so on? But actually, the justices are going to decide a very narrow jurisdictional question that nobody will understand, which is whether the lower court decision against Cheney is appealable.
Right.
Is appealable. That's all that they have to decide.
But when it comes down to it, the people who are suing to get these records, they're not just suing because it was a private meeting. I mean, they think that basically the energy policy was influenced by big energy companies, right? So how serious is that concern? Is this case about the White House?
The concern is very serious in public policy terms. Of course, we'd like to know whether Enron was really writing the energy policy. And we probably know that already without seeing this, because
we know what the
task force recommended. It recommended an Enron type policy.
And that also, you know, was what led to California almost going broke, isn't it?
It is. So, that's absolutely right. But those are political questions, and the country will quite rightly see the case in those terms. But it's a very narrow, funny little statute called the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which requires that notes of federal advisory committees be public if they include both administration officials and members of the public. And so one of the questions is whether the Enron people and the others who were called in to advise were members of the committee or just people who came in and gave advice for a day or two. That's the kind of narrow question they're grappling with.
It seems so ridiculous. So do you think the White House, they definitely have something to hide, right?
Yeah, they don't want it to become public. They also don't want to invoke executive privilege to hide it because that's embarrassing. So what they're falling back on is that the statute, this Federal Advisory Committee Act,
right,
if it requires that these contacts between the government and private individuals be made public, invades presidential power in violation of the constitutional separation of powers. Then they won't have to invoke executive privilege.
When we see quotes from various justices questioning the lawyers in the case from the Sierra Club or Judicial Watch or whatever, and we see that they're asking questions going in a particular direction, should we divine from that that's where their position will eventually be, or do they ask some of these questions and then vote the other way?
They generally don't. Now, Justice Scalia, about whom you've been talking, he's an ex-law professor, and he loves to ask questions. I mean, you know, Justice Frankfurter, in his day, he was an ex-law professor, used to pepper lawyers with questions. That's what law professors do. But, in fact, usually Scalia is quite candid in the course of his questions in disclosing what his position will be. So you don't have anything else to go on. You go on the questions.
Yeah, we're talking to Anthony Lewis, and we will the journalist, and we'll be right back with him after this. We hang out, Anthony?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, great.
All right.
Air America Radio. The answer to school prayer.
I don't know what we're going to do about Jason. He's head over heels in debt, and Jim refuses to bail him out again.
Well, he's a grown man with a good job. You've done your duty.
Yes, but Jim and I apparently fell down on the job when it came to educating him financially. He dreams of buying a condo, but he's only paying the minimum on his credit card.
Mm.
And he's at a stage where he won't appreciate advice from us. He needs someone he'll listen to. But who will give him good advice?
Maybe a financial planner?
How would we know he's getting someone who'll look at what he needs and not just sell him an investment or insurance plan? More bills he'll have trouble meeting.
Oh, you can really be assertive. I've been reading about this.
Uh-huh.
He can insist that the planner look at his whole financial situation and base recommendations on it. Then ask how the planner will be paid and what commissions or referral fees he'll get.
Oh.
For free information about choosing a planner and asserting your rights as a financial planning client, call Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards toll-free at 1-888-237-6275 or visit cfp.net.
At Volunteers of America, we don't just give kids a way to stay off the streets. We give them the tools they need to reach their full potential. We don't just help the elderly receive needed care. We help them live life to the fullest. We don't just provide food for homeless individuals and families. We provide job training and placements so they can buy groceries. Volunteers of America is a national organization that for over 100 years has provided programs and services that allow people to overcome their challenges to become vital members of their community. At Volunteers of America, we don't just help people. We help people help themselves. Find out how you can support the programs that are working in your community. Contact Volunteers of America today Call 1-800-899-0089. That's 1-800-899-0089.
Planet check. Clear skies, healthy forests. Don't believe the hype.
Clear skies. They use rhetoric that resonates with people, but the reality of their environmental programs is dirty air, dirty water.
That's Carol Browner, former EPA administrator under Clinton.
The current administration has been very successful in dressing up and spinning their terrible record on the environment. Environment 2004 is a group of committed environmentalists who want to make sure that voters across the country, swing voters, know exactly what the Bush administration is doing in terms of clean air, clean water, how they are failing to enforce our environmental laws.
Environment 2004's mission? Educate voters on the facts and emphasize the critical importance of this presidential election.
Please visit our website, environment2004.org.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Randy Rhodes.
New York doesn't take this voting thing all that seriously because you guys, you still have those machines that I used to vote on with the curtain. You know, there's no curtain in Florida. There's no privacy in Florida. You stand at a snack tray. But now we're going to do touchscreen voting and there's no paper. So they can't do a recount. They can't compare exit polls to what, you know, what people say as they leave the polling places.
Randy Rhodes, afternoons 3 to 7 on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Reilly with Mark Maron and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. We're talking the U.S. Supreme Court with Pulitzer Prize winning writer and educator Anthony Lewis. Anthony, are you back with us?
Hello.
Hi. Sue's got a question for you.
Hello, Anthony. You've written in the forthcoming edition of Mother Jones about the Bush administration cracking down on civil liberties. And I just like to know how significant you think the Energy Task Force case being heard by the Supreme Court is in terms of actually understanding that particular issue and what, or whether it's speaks more to how much secrecy you think that the Bush administration wants to demand.
I don't think it's a civil liberties issue. Civil liberties are the crux of the two cases being heard today, which I think we'll come to and are very profoundly important. I think the issue, the underlying question, not the legal question, but the larger question in the Cheney case, is the penchant, the obsessive desire of the Bush administration for secrecy. There's a new book by John Dean called Worse Than Watergate about the Bush administration's yearning for secrecy in everything it does. And it is extraordinary. They just don't like anybody to know what they're doing.
Mm. Now, you mentioned the cases that the court is hearing today, the case of alleged dirty bomb plotter Jose Padilla and alleged enemy fighter Yasser Hamdi. Now, these cases are, I think, interesting to a lot of Americans because both of these people are American citizens. Padilla and Hamdi were born in the United States, but they've been classified as enemy combatants, and I guess the cases are seen as having pretty wide implications for U.S. citizens who are accused of certain kinds of crimes. What are the central issues that the court is dealing with here?
The central issue is a claim of power by the President of the United States. It's the most extraordinary claim of power in my lifetime. I want to tell you, I know that's a strong statement. I make it with care, and I believe it. The claim is that the President can pick out anybody, anyone in this country, any American citizen, and say, you're an enemy combatant, you're going into a prison to in a cell all by yourself for the rest of your life. You can't consult with a lawyer. There will be no charge. There will be no grand jury indictment. There will be no trial. You're just in there until I tell you you can go. It's an amazing claim of power. And to me it is. I can't, you know, it's very hard for me even to absorb it.
So it's really it's the denial of due process, and it's the, in some ways, the unraveling of democracy.
Well, that's what I think. The other side, the government says due process is whatever the government says is due. And in wartime, we say you can't have any because we think you're an enemy combatant. Of course, Padilla, that's the case I'm particularly interested in, has never had a chance to contest the announced claim that he was a dirty bomber or planned to be. He's never had any chance to confront any accusers. There's been no proper hearing. There's nothing. He just stuck away in there.
How do you expect the Supreme Court to rule on that?
Oh, well, you know, forecasting what the court will do is a very difficult business. Putting it as strongly as I have and believing it as strongly as I do, I'm bound to think that the court will not allow it because it is so much against American tradition, American democracy, American law. But it is also a fact that over centuries, really from the beginning of the Republic, the court has sustained presidential claims of power in wartime. Now, this is the, quote, war against terror. And so there's that other element. We must let the president do what he wants during wartime, and I don't know which will prevail.
It's an unending war against terror that could go on for eternity, according to this administration.
That is a crucial fact.
Right.
I think you've put your finger on what I think is very important. And these past episodes, like the Civil War, World War I, World War II, when we put Japanese Americans inside stockades, all of those were limited in length, and after the war was over, we apologized. Jefferson remitted the fines of people imprisoned under the Sedition Act. We've apologized to the Japanese Americans and paid them small compensation. But this may go on the rest of our lives.
So the idea is that out of the American public, out of fear of terrorism, will allow this to happen in their minds. It's a reasonable thing to do. But ultimately, that you know, people like me and perhaps other people who are reacting to this are actually afraid of the administration because once the terror is over, what would stop them from pinpointing anybody for any number of reasons?
Of course, that's right. That's what I believe.
What is the difference between the cases of Jose Padilla, Yasser Hamdi, and John Walker Lind?
Well, another interesting question. The difference is that the government, for reasons we don't understand, chose to proceed against Lind in an ordinary criminal case where he had a lawyer, a trial, and all the rights that people are entitled to in this country.
Upper middle class
parents. Along come Hamdi and Padilla, and they say, you have no rights at all. They haven't justified that distinction.
I think it was because he came from an upper middle class, white American family.
His family was very organized. They got out right there in the media. They made their case for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true.
Now, Yasser Hamdi has apparently exhausted all of his federal appeals. Am I right about that?
Well, he's in the Supreme Court.
He's in the Supreme Court, okay. Now, in Padilla's case, though, how much hard evidence does the government actually have? If they put him in a criminal court, what are the chances they'd actually convict him of anything?
Now, we don't know the answer to that because we haven't seen the evidence. The only evidence the government has produced, with no firsthand witnesses and no cross-examination, nothing of an ordinary happens in a trial, all they've produced is a statement by a Pentagon official called Michael Mobbs, and the Mobbs Declaration, it's called. And it's simply, you know, it's a statement by the government. So, how it would stand up in court, I don't know. They couldn't possibly use it in a court unless it was backed up by first-hand witnesses and subject to cross-examination. So, you know, unless they had those witnesses, they wouldn't get anywhere.
Anthony Lewis, we thank you so much for being with us this morning.
My pleasure.
Take care. And Anthony Lewis's article is in the upcoming issue of Mother Jones.
It's so amazing to when people like him, you know, who can put things, you know, in the context that I can understand it, you know, really shed light on stuff. Because that's always been my fear, is that, you know, once they put these rulings in, like once they are free to have that kind of, you know, heinous, you know, lack of justice to just grab anybody in the name of, you know, the fight against terrorism. Unless somebody really stays on top, certainly of this administration, they can institute it any way they want. I mean, who's to say that they couldn't come after us just for being on this radio station, you know, after all this, you know, settles or doesn't settle? What's to stop them from coming after
safe.
Us?
I think they'd go for you first, definitely. But this is why they're pushing so hard to renew the Patriot Act. This is why Bush has been out there campaigning to get Patriot Act 2 through.
To keep it forever, so that they don't have to answer
to... powers that are beyond the usual. They want that to continue. And it's happening in other countries,
powers.
Too. It's happening in Britain. Same issue.
What's happening there?
People being held without trial, people held without access to lawyers for far longer than usual, without due process. It's become, you know, an issue in any country in the war against terrorism. Any, you know, it's... It's not exclusive to the U.S. It's perhaps more egregious here, but it's becoming an international problem.
The scariest part is that Anthony Lewis, a guy who knows an awful lot about the United States Supreme Court, says that the Padilla case in particular is one that he feels is going to have ramifications, you know, for generations to
the rest
come.
Of time.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary.
It's going to set a precedent that's going to have repercussions from here on out.
From here on.
Still ahead, we have my morning devotional. We've got Recovery Corner. We've got a bit about Carrie and his supposedly $1,000 haircut. So stay with us here on Air America.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Israel's Prime Minister Ariel Sharon continues to fan the flames of war, charging that his nation's response to Palestinian violence after a pullout from the Gaza Strip would be even harsher than it is now. Sharon thinks that after a pullout, Palestinian Arabs could no longer explain violence by saying Israel was occupying their land. Jewish groups yesterday urged European governments to take a fresh, high-profile step to combat anti-Semitism. That's the focus of a 55-nation conference on anti-Semitism this week in Berlin. President Bush and Vice President Cheney are gearing up for their appearance tomorrow before the 9/11 investigative panel. Both will appear before the panel together as requested by the administration. They will be meeting behind closed doors. And Pennsylvania's veteran Senator Arlen Specter edged out party rival and conservative Representative Patrick Toomey in yesterday's Republican primary in the Keystone State. The Toomey challenge was a fight for Specter's political life. Wayne Gilman, Air America, Radio News.
Welcome to the Hot House Cafe. What can I get you?
Hello, Flo.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Wildfire. You're looking incendiary today. What can I get you, sweet pea?
Let's see. I'm so hungry I could consume a neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
I think I'll start with the toasted woodshed shingle sandwich.
All righty. Super salad, baby doll.
And the backyard dry brush salad looks delicious. I'll have that.
Okie dokie, with or without succulents?
Without. You know I can't stand water-retaining plants.
Oh, that's right.
And for dessert, I'd like an old gazebo sundae, sprinkled with irreplaceable photos and family heirlooms.
Anything to drink, Father?
Lawnmower gasoline. Unless you have some carelessly stored paint thinner.
I think we just might.
Goody.
Knowing what Wildfire likes to eat is half the battle. Visit firewise.org to find out how you can help make your home more defensible against wildfires. That's firewise.org. A public service brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Welcome aboard. If you're just tuning in, it's now time for something we do every day. We have our morning devotional, Mark. Dear Lord, this morning we'd like to offer a prayer for your servant George W. Bush, who tomorrow faces the 9/11 Commission. His servants are briefing him today on what exactly he did leading up to that horrible day. Lord, keep our president focused. He's got a lot of preparing to do, and, well, you know how he is. It's hard to remember what really happened, but it's twice as hard to remember what other people told you really happened. And then there's all that memorizing to do. Was it September 11, 2001, or April 7, 2003, or August 16, 1975? So many numbers. Even I'm confused, Lord. And at some point, while sorting through all those documents, he may have to admit some mistakes. And when it comes to that, well, you know how he is, right, Lord? Look, we're not asking for Bush to be perfect tomorrow. We lowered our expectations about him a long time ago. We wouldn't even have to testify. He wouldn't even have to testify under oath. But, Lord, could you just make it so it's not completely embarrassing? Could you? I mean, you saw the press conference, didn't you? All right, listen. You know how he is. Amen.
Amen. Somewhere in Washington, I keep imagining George W. Bush hearing that and say, Maron, I hear you, buddy.
Don't say that. After just talking to Anthony Lewis, you know what I mean? I don't want to be the next. Oh, now I'm paranoid. With both campaigns focusing on each man's qualifications to serve as the military's commander-in-chief, Air America has put together a special series focusing on what each man was doing at that point in American history when their country needed them the most. Right now, we present the second installment of our three-part series.
To better understand the men who would be our leaders, Air America takes a closer look at the events that shaped their lives.
December 2nd, 1968. John Kerry, patrolling the area near the Mekong Delta, gets his first taste of intense combat and is wounded in the arm. He is awarded his first Purple Heart. On that same day, half a world away, Air National Guard member George W. Bush, in a routine check of his airplane's instrument panel, accidentally ejects himself into the hangar ceiling.
Two men, two lives. Now you, the voter, must decide. Give it some thought this time.
Oh, wow. Man. Our special series will continue with part three in the next hour of Morning's Edition. Oh, my God. We got to play that every day.
But
today's big news on the Drudge Report, okay, which is always reliable, on Friday before his Meet the Press appearance, Democratic presidential hopeful John Kerry flew his Washington, D.C. hairdresser to Pittsburgh for a touch-up. Now, the Drudge Report says that the entire expense of the trip, of the haircut and everything else, was $1,000. And then it puts in quotes, her entire schedule had to be rearranged. The hairstylist had to rearrange. Look, who cares if it costs $1,000? That's part of the production budget of a campaign. I mean, if the guy needs to look good, he needs to go on TV. Why do they criticize him? If we really to look at, like, you know, how much it costs Bush just to maintain whatever it is he needs to maintain on a, you know, day-to-day level, like, you know, they got to groom the dogs, he's got to, you know, get his suits pressed. It's a ridiculous thing to criticize somebody for, don't you think?
His Nordic track, you mean?
Who, Bush's?
Isn't he on one of those things every day?
He does
day?
Have a Nordic
He
track.
Does have some. I don't know if it's Nordic track. He used to say he could run like gym machine.
Five 8-minute miles, he said he used to run a day. 5 to 6 8-minute miles George Bush used to run a day. There's no way.
I'm surprised he could count that high.
There's just no way. I mean, I run, and that's, you know, even I'm younger than him and healthier and less chunky.
He has time to go out 5 times a day and run?
Not
that's
anymore.
Worrying.
He was doing that. I think they put that on the back burner. So, like, don't talk about how much you exercise.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because I know from the exercising that the only reason you exercise is to clear your head and not think about things and try to put things into perspective. And if he needs to do that, given what he's starting with, it's pretty scary. But I just don't think this is a reasonable way to criticize a candidate if he had a $1,000 haircut and to break it down like that. It's just, so what?
But they didn't break it down.
Well, he said that. He said that to fly the guy out and to have the haircut. And
woman,
the, you know,
woman.
Woman.
Oh, the woman.
Isabel.
Well, you know, I've heard. I did. You know, I mean, let's not jump to conclusions.
Shall we sing in the
he
name?
He flew the person out. No. I just think it's ridiculous to, he tried to break it down. He's making assumptions. But who cares? It's part of the production budget. What do you want?
There is something that Americans...
They're putting billions of dollars into advertising. He can't put $1,000 into a haircut. It's part of it.
How come Americans like their Democratic candidates with so much hair? Because Clinton had loads of hair as well.
I don't know if that holds. Reagan had a lot of hair. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe
it's
right.
Like guys with a lot of hair.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Dukakis did have a lot of hair, and JFK had a lot of hair. Ford, not so much hair.
I mean, they're not bald. There
Johnson,
is some, there's,
no.
It's,
no,
kind
Ford
of an anti, it's an anti-male pattern baldness thing, isn't it?
It's vital.
Someone should strike
Youthful.
Back.
Well, actually, Ford wasn't elected.
W has
so,
hair.
Yeah, W has hair. But Ford was probably the most follically challenged president we've had. And he lost when he ran for election.
Yeah, you do have to look at it. It's pretty important. I mean, Nixon learned that when he went up against Kennedy on television. You know what I mean?
Well, that was the sweat. I mean, Nixon sweated. You know, that was in the early days of television. I think it was one of the first or earliest televised.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, they didn't have the whole lighting thing down, Pat. It was in black and white. And I was like 9 years old when that debate took place. And the sweat across Nixon's forehead was, he looked like, you know, a criminal.
All right, the sweat of somebody hiding something already.
Yeah, exactly. And he hadn't even been elected at that
time. The sweat of an evil, ambitious little man.
And, of course, Kennedy's forehead was completely covered by his hair.
He's perfect, though. And that ate up Nixon forever.
Yeah.
He never forgot that, did he?
No, he never did. He never was able to get past the fact that he clearly, in the minds of the American public, lost the first televised debate they'd ever seen.
And I think that, like, you know, $1,000 may be a lot for a haircut, but he's generalizing and he's making it seem sort of, he's vilifying Kerry for having that done. And I think he's playing, of course, to the people who's like, I'll go to Supercuts. I don't spend more than $8 on a haircut. What kind of girly man would spend more than $8 on a haircut? Well, I would.
It's playing into the whole conservative thing this week, though, of, you know, Teresa and her cars and how Kerry has so much money and he's some kind of plutocrat. It's just, you know, if he were like the hard scrabble guy who'd been, you know, the son of a miner, then they maybe wouldn't be busting him in this way. But they feel they've got some kind of momentum to get Kerry on the fact that he, you know, he acts one way, they say, but he is rich. He can afford, I mean, it is nuts to say he had a $1,000 haircut. That's like saying I'm going to London this weekend for a $1,000 cup of coffee just because I might have one with a friend of mine on Saturday, and that includes my airfare.
They're insinuating, though. Yeah, it is dumb, but I wonder, I think it works on some people's heads.
Yeah,
and
but
also,
you have to be careful.
Look how much hair he has. That hair, that head of hair needs attention. You know, I don't have that much hair. I'm not balding, but I'll spend $50 on a haircut to make it right. You know what I mean? Because we got to hold on to something. We got to keep the appearances, for God's sakes.
Well, first there was the Botox rumor. Now it's the $1,000. I think you hit it on the head, Mark, when you talked about the whole girly man quotient.
Yeah.
I think the conservatives are trying to make him look like he's somehow almost effeminate, that only a woman would spend a grand on their hair.
That's nuts.
Of course it's
I mean,
nuts,
Clinton,
but that's what they're
Clinton,
trying to tell.
All candidates, I mean, if you looked at the amount of time spent with kind of makeup and hair, I bet you that, you know, Clinton and Bush and Cheney are going to be groomed and fussed over before they appear on the 9/11 Commission on Thursday this week, because it's all about being good on camera.
Always. Are you kidding? You know how much makeup Dick Cheney needs just to look human?
There won't be any cameras there.
He's on special
they
effects
gotta powder
in the Hollywood
that guy.
Studio.
No,
oh, yeah.
They won't SFX. Need any of that because there's going to be no cameras.
I got a guy.
Only note takers.
I got a guy with a tape recorder. I'm going to get into the panel room. We're going to get those tapes of Bush and Cheney.
Really?
Yeah, he's a bootleg guy.
Well, you know, Cheney may need a little work on that hair because he's got a little bald spot up top there.
Yeah, a little bald spot? We're gonna go up to Recovery Corner up next, and we're taking your calls on Kerry's haircut and anything you want to talk about at 866-303-AAR0. 866-303-2270. Who knows? William from Chappaqua might even call again here on Air America.
This is Michael Stipe, and you are listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Air America Radio. For a complete tape library of all our programs, contact John Ashcroft.
Planet. Are what biologists call keystone species. They're predators at the top of the food chain. So if you remove the wolf, you create a massive imbalance.
That's Emma Ruth Weiss, Western Director of Species Conservation for Defenders of Wildlife. After a 70-year absence, wolves have been reintroduced in Yellowstone Park.
Now there's food on the ground again for other species.
The return of wolves helps keep elk on the move.
Now that the wolves are back, the elk don't stay in one place. And the willow and the aspen are absolutely flourishing. And it's excellent for beavers, who also need these plants for food and to build dams. And what do we get with dams? Cool, deep ponds that are needed by young fish for their survival.
Wolves still need protection. For all the 411 on the gray wolf and its vital role in the ecosystem,
www.defenders.org.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Mom was just diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Now what? How much longer does she have? Will she start losing her memory right away? What's it going to take care of her? Should she continue to drive? Will she remember me? Are there any treatments yet? How much longer till there's a cure? Am I going to have to get help? Will she have to move into a nursing home? What do I do now? Is there anything I can do? Why is this happening to us?
If you have questions about Alzheimer's disease, the Alzheimer's Disease Education and Referral Center can help. We're the most comprehensive resource for learning and coping with Alzheimer's. Just call 1-800-438-4380 for referrals and information, beginning with a free copy of the Caregiver's Kit. We may not have answers to all your questions, but we do have all the answers that exist. So call today, 1-800-438-4380. This is a service of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Planet. We would go from venue to venue across the southern United States and travel in a van that ran both on biodiesel gas and also on straight French fry grease.
That's singer-songwriter Rachel Garland from Berkeley, California, singing the praises of touring on biodiesel.
Our objective was to spread the word that there are alternatives to petroleum.
Garland admits that people are overwhelmed when facing our eco problems, but grassroots education is key.
These local solutions will serve to inspire and activate us and energize us so that we can continue to spread these local solutions until they become global solutions.
Fill her up with alternative fuel online at
www.rachelgarland.com.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
The O'Franken Factor.
On Wednesday's O'Franken Factor, we award George W. Bush the coveted Yellow Heart for his courageous service to our nation during the Vietnam War. As you all know, he was wounded in the liver in action in an Alabama bar during that terrible time and still has two dental fillings that to this day ache every time he lies. Wednesday, O'Franken, be there.
Good morning. I'm Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's 15 before the hour. And please call us, will you? Talk to us. 866-303-AAR0. 866-303-2270. You can talk to us about Carrie's haircut. You can talk to us about James Ridgway's, defeatist attitude coming from the liberal camp, which is something we'll talk about a little more later. But right now, I'd like to say my name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Yes, it's time for Recovery Corner. This is when I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. And as always, I'm offering counsel to my temporary sponsee, George W. Now, George W., you've been ordering some incredibly fierce bombings in Iraq the last 2 days, and it's probably not a coincidence that today is Saddam Hussein's birthday. You've got to stop making this so personal. You've got to let Saddam go. I mean, I don't mean, let him go, but in your head, remember, resentment is the number one offender. Resentment will take you back to a drink. Think about Saddam for a second. This may not be the happiest of birthdays for him. Here's a guy used to celebrating on a much grander scale. Cake, fireworks, maybe shoot some dissidents in the face. But this year, stale pita and solitary confinement. There, but for the grace of God, go you, George W. So what a better day. What better day to apologize. Say, Saddam, I'm sorry I included you in this axis of evil. That was hurtful. I hope you have a nice birthday in your urine-soaked cell. And maybe have the Red Cross bring him a Fudgy the Whale cake from Carvel or something. Remember, anger is just a letter away from danger. It works if you work it, so work it, you're worth it, now live it. Keep the plug in the jug. God doesn't wake up and think he's you. First things first, one day at a time, do the next right thing. That's been Recovery Corner today.
I think he just fell off his Nordic track.
We're taking calls. We got Leo in Illinois. How are you, Leo?
Just fine. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh.
I wanted to say that.
Nice to hear you.
I got a question about the $1,000 haircut. How come the Republicans, or should I say the hypocritical party, is complaining about a $1,000 haircut, but it's okay to have us taxpayers pay for a flight out to an aircraft carrier and dress up in a flight suit for a photo op that says mission accomplished?
Right. A year ago, May 2nd, I think.
Yeah.
Good point. May 1st? Is it May 1st?
Yeah, this is coming out a year ago Saturday.
So he didn't do that on Saddam's birthday.
I wonder what dredge up about how much that costs.
That's a good point. And that's just like one of the expenses. How about a million, billion, trillion dollars? Yeah. The number here, 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Give us a call. We've got Rom in San Antonio. Rom.
Yes, sir.
Nice name. How are you?
Not bad. I really like your comedic spin on things.
Thank you.
All right. I called to tell you about the mindset of people elsewhere, in the East. I'm from India.
Uh-huh.
And people really do not value money. And
wait, where is this?
In most of the other parts of the world, they like money, but it's not what they thrive on. For example, if you give them a lot of money, if you give them electricity, if you give them good sewage, if you give them good water, they'll take it all and still oppose the occupation. People just don't like to be occupied. And as long as we don't understand that, we will be in a conflict.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying that no matter what is done for them, if they feel like they're being intruded upon or being forced to believe in a government or a system that isn't theirs, they will rebel.
Yes, and I think it was one of your leaders, Patrick Henry, who said, "I know not what other means others may pursue, but as of me, give me liberty or death."
Okay, I might just intervene here, given that I'm probably descended from some evil colonialists who had something to do with India. But you have a point that people don't want to be occupied or bossed around, and they want to kind of run their own country. But I do think that if there had been a better job in the post-war period of organizing Iraq, getting things up and functioning and working on a kind of day-to-day civilized basis, that there wouldn't have been nearly the amount of resentment against the occupation that there now is.
I want that guy to call back every day. I want him to call every day, and I want him to quote other American leaders. I want Rahm to call every day.
Patrick Henry.
Will you tell him to call every day, please?
Why?
Because I love his accent. I love his accent. It's like I don't know what it is. I've got this. I just.
You never said that to me, Mark.
Well, I don't love your accent.
Now we're going to go there.
I knew it.
Isn't that funny that you're taking...
I was just waiting for you to set that up.
She's actually taking issue because I actually love an Indian accent, which has something to do with the colonial roots, too, as well.
No, mind, he might not call, but he might feel a little bit patronized and decide not to call back.
No.
I have this weird thing.
I love your accent.
But I love Indian food, and I don't know a lot about Indian culture, and I've always been very fond of Indian people, and I don't even know why. And somebody asked me, a cab driver once, who was from India, I was like, I really want to go to India. And he goes, why do you want to go, to India? And all I could say was, I just love the bread, I'm fascinated with the whole culture, but I have not done any homework to really to learn about it. We've got Dominique in London.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Hello, hey, Mark. You're sounding pretty normal today. What's happening? You not been hitting the Dunkin' Donuts?
I did it, man. I did it earlier. I was all jacked up for a while, and I drank the Dunkin' Donuts too early, and I kind of blew out early. But I'll go get another one, man. I'll go get another one.
You're like the highlight of my morning every morning to hear. It gets me all pumped up.
All right, I'm sorry, man. I'll get on it, man. I'm going to have an IV here. We were talking about getting the Dunkin' Donuts box of Joe for $11. You could actually get a box, and I'm going to come in with a box tomorrow.
And a straw,
and I'm just going to sit here and juice up the world.
Actually, I got a question actually for Sue. I'm over here in just off Westminster right now, and I wanted to know, Michael Howard pretty much beat up today on Tony Blair about the possible 2,000 troops going over to Iraq now, and they're probably going to be centered around the Sunni Triangle. Now, I don't know if a lot of people over there know, but the whole softly approach to the British troops, do you think that's going to work?
You mean that sending them in kind of slowly, not in a big...
Well, after what's happened already, it's been pretty strong-arm tactics from the States. So, bringing in the British troops with a more softer kind of approach, do you think that's even going to be worth, is that even going to have any kind of effect?
I don't know. He's really kind of asking us about the conservative challenge to Tony Blair's government, and I think it just speaks to that there is increasing opposition in the public to any increased involvement by the British military. I mean, they're going to have to go in now near Najaf, where the Spanish have left. Mm-hmm. So they are going to go and fill in, a very kind of dangerous area in Iraq. Mm-hmm. I don't know, softly approach. I think that they should be very careful at putting any additional troops
in. I thought they were resisting. That is heading north from where they are now, right?
I believe so.
So, and wasn't that what the U.S. wanted them to do last week? And I thought they were hesitant to do it. Now they're going to do it?
I think that's the debate, whether they are going to go in and do it or not.
Ah, okay.
We've got, I think we've got Bill in Harlem.
No.
I'm sorry. We've got William from Chappaqua.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not in Harlem. I'm in Chappaqua.
I'm sorry.
I'm not
I,
to go.
Oh, boy. Now, this is, how are you, President Clinton? He just, he's got his memoirs coming out, and, you know, it's good that you finished them. We were talking to you when you were still working on them.
That's right. I'm still doing some last-minute fix-ups, but we're getting ready to set up the book tour now.
Oh, yeah? And where are you planning on heading?
I just basically want to get back in touch with all of America.
So now, wait, we do have Bill in Harlem now.
Hey, Mark.
How are you, Bill?
It sounds like Santa Claus.
This confuses me. So I've got Bill in Harlem and William in Chappaqua.
That's right. There's two of us. One is not enough.
Where do you guys eat breakfast anyway?
Well, it depends on the company we're keeping. I eat breakfast in the breakfast nook with the little missus.
Uh-huh.
I tend to eat breakfast wherever part of town I wake up in.
It's good Bill and bad Bill. So where are you heading on the book tour, fellas? Or fella? President?
Well, I've been wondering whether we need to book some hotel rooms for me across the nation, but I'm not exactly sure. Oh, William, you kill me, buddy. Well, you can book a Hotel 6 if you want to, my friend, but let's put it this way. I have accommodations elsewhere. Certain people willing to kindness of strangers, you know what I'm saying. I'm just not sure that's a good idea at this point. You never do, William.
It's good Bill and bad.
Why do you always do this to me?
How's Hillary?
Are you asking me or asking him? We've got different answers on that one.
I'll take good Bill.
Doing quite well. We're getting along famously.
Yeah, and bad Bill?
Oh, you know, same old, same old.
I thought you were going to say, which Hillary?
Yeah, right.
So, fellas, what's the big plan for today?
You asking me or him? Well, why don't you do it first, Bill, because... Well, you're the responsible one. Well, I was going to call Bill Richardson, talk to him a little bit about the latest in Iraq, see what his feelings are about where the U.S. should be going at this point. It's a very delicate juncture, I'd say. International cooperation is key. We need to reach out to as many allies as possible.
And that, Bill?
Well, maybe some biscuits and gravy. And then I'm looking at a $1,000 haircut.
Well, thanks a lot, Bill and William. Thanks for calling, as usual.
Nice to meet you there, Mark.
All right, man.
Bye now.
Bye. All right.
This is a haircut with other services thrown in.
The two Clintons. So I guess we can go ahead and take some more calls even. Carlos in Brooklyn.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
We're going to laugh our way right to Gitmo Bay at this rate.
Uh-oh.
I'm getting so outraged at what's going on. Yesterday, they had a judiciary hearing. One of Ken Starr's boys is up for a lifetime appointment. Brett Kavanaugh.
Right.
It's outrageous. And Cheney is in, you know, hiding behind this privilege stuff, the hardiness of it, with Scalia daring to ask questions. This is the same gang that spent $70 million turning up every email, wave records on who came in and out of the White House over a sex scandal. And we can't even, in a democracy, supposedly open government, find out which oil company executives came in and out, and what they said. I mean, they're just outraged. This is the same Supreme Court, by the way, that said we can't even count the votes because it might discomfort the candidate, Mr. Bush.
But maybe it's enough to know that the executive director of Cheney's task force left to work at the energy as an energy industry lobbyist.
Yeah.
The day he left. I mean, what more do we need to know? We're just going through the motions here with this court case.
It's so frustrating, though. I understand that guy's anger because, you know, even with all this stuff out, even with us talking about it, you know, every day, and even with, you know, the amount of information that we can get, you still feel a little powerless because it doesn't seem like there's any, you know, sort of
traction.
Respect. Yeah, there's no traction, but there's absolutely, you know, they'll spin it any way they want to, and the people in power will continue doing what they're doing. They're just steamrolling the American people at every
time. They are pursuing a very specific agenda, and they're doing it with a great deal of focus. what Carlos was talking about in terms of the judiciary has been under the radar for the last several years. They have been trying and in many cases succeeding in putting conservatives on the bench. Don't go away. In our next hour, Coaching the President, Mark Maron has today's dream diary, and we've got somebody to interpret them. Dr. Nando Pelosi joins us in studio, and of course, the liberal agenda, all coming up here on Air America Radio.
Hey, Steve?
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now, I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours, so what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out, because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
There's a resort called Give Kids the World where children with life-threatening illnesses can fill their week with pure joy. Kids and their families indulge in simple pleasures like swimming, visiting local Orlando theme parks, and eating unlimited ice cream, all for free. Call 800-995-KIDS or visit the Give Kids the World website at gktw.org and help give them a time to remember. Brought to you by Give Kids the World and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 1190 WLIV New York, the home of Air America Radio.
In the next hour of Morning Sedition here on Air America, President Bush crams for his big test tomorrow, and we'll finally have someone in to analyze my insane, political, and disturbing dreams. But first, here are the headlines at this hour.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The nation's high court today will shed light on the controversial case of American-born detainee Jose Padilla. He's a Chicago native of Latino heritage who turned Muslim and moved to Egypt before his arrest 2 years ago at Chicago's O'Hare Airport on suspicion of being a dirty bomber. Padilla has been kept behind bars by presidential order, even though no formal charges have been brought against him. His attorney, Donna Newman, wants to know why he's been held this long without a charge.
What they are saying, if you really read it, is that he had information that they wanted. But that's a little scary, isn't it?
Attorney Donna Newman representing American detainee Jose Padilla. More tough talk from Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon this morning. He says his nation will respond with brute force beyond anything witnessed before if Palestinians become violent over Israel's withdrawal from the Gaza Strip. Sharon contends the Palestinians will have nothing to balk about once the Israelis are no longer occupying their land. Closer to home, Pennsylvania's veteran lawmaker Arlen Specter pulled out all the stops yesterday to retain his seat in a hot primary contest with conservative challenger and Congressman Patrick Toomey. Specter is calling on Republicans to unite now that the primary is over.
Now is the time, having settled our family disagreement within the Republican Party, to unify, to reelect President Bush, to maintain the Republican majority in the United States Senate.
Moderate Republican Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. There's growing concern in New York about the level of protest activity expected at the upcoming Republican National Convention. New York law enforcement has been keeping a watchful eye on what's expected outside the event at Madison Square Garden, but concern is on the rise over the possibility that protesters may disrupt activities inside the garden. Observers say it's foregone that agents have already infiltrated the protest movement to undermine their activity.
Just when you thought politics couldn't get any dirtier, now Bill Hilsman is dragging it to a new low. Bill Hilsman says our current election system is run solely for the profit of political parties, pollsters, and special interest groups. Bill Hilsman says the two major political parties are denying Americans more choices by shutting out new candidates and new ideas. And Bill Hilsman accuses Republicans and Democrats of using negative advertising to actually lower voter turnout. Bill Hilsman. Bad for Republicans, bad for Democrats, bad for America.
Wait a minute. What office is Bill Hilsman running for?
He's not. Hilsman was a consultant for Paul Wellstone, Jesse Ventura, and Ralph Nader. But his new book, Run the Other Way, is bad for the political establishment, bad for America.
So, Bill Hilsman is a threat to everyone in politics, and they don't want you to read Run the Other Way.
I'll say again. Run the Other Way by Bill Hilsman in bookstores now is bad for Washington insiders, bad for America.
Pro-choice groups are demanding an apology from one of President Bush's top advisors. In a letter published yesterday, Planned Parenthood President Gloria Feld called Karen Hughes' comments in a Sunday CNN interview insensitive and divisive. Hughes, a close counselor of the president, was asked about Sunday's massive Washington protest against the administration's reproductive rights policies. She invoked 9/11 and appeared to compare abortion rights groups to terrorists. Federal Reserve Board Chair Alan Greenspan says the prospects of persistently high energy prices would help check energy use and lead businesses to rethink energy-related investment decisions. Greenspan told a conference at the Center for Strategic and International Studies that the dramatic rise in oil and natural gas future prices in recent years carried the potential to significantly affect the long-term path of the U.S. economy. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Your mother's got out her photo album.
Oh, poor kids.
And this is your father.
Where's his head?
Camera missed it, I guess. Here's Aunt Judy.
Her hair used to be orange.
Yeah, I guess the camera was a little off. Here's cousin Tommy.
He's fuzzy.
This Mother's Day, take the guesswork out of Mom's photography and printing.
Hey, Mom, open this.
With HP's PhotoSmart 735 digital camera and 7960 photo printer with breakthrough 8-ink technology for brilliant colors that resist fading for generations.
Is it complicated?
No, Mom, it's HP. It's pretty foolproof.
It's what proof?
And now, buy both and get a $75 mail-in rebate. Learn more about HP cameras, printers, and PCs at your nearest retailer or hpshopping.com/mom. Color results based on Wilhelm Imaging Research, Inc. using the HP 58 photo inkjet print cartridge on HP Premium Plus photo papers.
Look, Grandma just took a picture of Dad standing in the corner.
Nice.
HP. Invent.
Weeds, like dandelion, clover, and hundreds of others, can stand between you and a thick green lawn. That's why Bayer Advanced created Triple Action Lawn Fertilizer Plus Weed Control. It does two jobs at once. It kills four times as many types of weeds as the leading brand, while it feeds at every level. The grass, the roots, plus it fortifies the soil for a thicker, deep-down green that lasts longer. Without the weeds, guaranteed. Bayer Advanced. Better thinking, better results. Available at Lowe's and other garden retailers.
To watch someone you love suffer from Alzheimer's disease is very painful. Not to know why or what to do or how you can help is almost unbearable. That's why the National Institute on Aging has published a book filled with valuable information on Alzheimer's disease. It's called Unraveling the Mystery. Call 1-800-438-4380 for your free copy. You'll get over 50 pages of information on how the disease works, the latest research, and the latest advances in diagnosis and treatment. You'll also learn what kind of help is available and where to find it. So if you or someone you love has Alzheimer's disease, call 1-800-438-4380 for this free booklet. Knowledge can't take away the suffering that Alzheimer's causes, but it can help to make it a little more bearable. This is a service of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm Nick Cannon.
We're Rad.
What's up? I'm Beyonce.
Hey, I'm Kelly.
Hello, I'm Michelle.
And we're Destiny's Child.
What's up, y'all? It's Eve.
Hey, this is Meredith Edwards for Rad. And I'm here to remind you that friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council. Yeah!
Right now it's 7 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. We're excitedly waiting for today's liberal agenda. Plus, because you demanded it, I'm getting a shrink in here to help me work through some of my issues, my dreams.
You issues? Nah.
Not a moment too soon.
Oh, my God. What is happening to me? But right now, I'm here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley. We're all here together on this Wednesday morning. We've been here for a couple hours. It's been good.
It's been
educational. Good. It's been funny. We've learned a lot.
Mark's coffee's worn off.
I'm up. My coffee's, I don't know if maybe I'm getting a little, maybe I got the, you know, like the drips, you know. Like,
Riley knows what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. That's the sad part. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Man, could somebody, like, you know, muzzle Karen Hughes? What is she, like, you know, Bush's Joe Goebbels? Goebbels? What is this woman? I mean, like, she claims that what she said to Wolf Blitzer the other night about abortion and the right to choice was, like, a gross misinterpretation. Listen to this. She's talking to Blitzer, right? About this, about the issue of choice, I guess, right? And she said, well, Wolf, it's always an issue. And frankly, I think it's changing somewhat. I think after September 11th, the American people are valuing life more and realizing that we need policies to value the dignity and worth of every life. And then she goes on to say, and I think those are the kind of policies that the American people can support, particularly at a time when we're facing an enemy. And really, the fundamental difference between us and the terror network we fight is that we value every life. This was a different context, but it's like right after she talked about abortion. It's the founding conviction of our country that we're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, the right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, our enemies in the terror network, as we're seeing repeatedly in the headlines these days, don't value any life, not even the innocent and not even their own. And she's claiming that she's not making a connection between the terrorists and people who fight for the right to choose whether or not they can have an abortion or not. Isn't it clear that she is?
I don't know. I have felt that my children at times were enemy combatants. Maybe she has a point.
But I don't think
she... Of course she doesn't have a point.
No, but
she has no point. Why do they have to tie everything to 9/11?
But
the abortion
thing is,
issue tied to 9/11 is completely absurd.
Don't they think we can't see through their code? Because they speak in code to their sort of like their more sort of easily led kind of narrow-minded minions. And then they say to us, intelligent people, I'm not saying all their minions are unintelligent.
They are in fact intelligent, but you
yeah,
know,
but,
hey,
but when intelligent people actually call them on it, they go, oh, no. I mean, how could you insinuate that I'm making that connection? Because it's two sentences away from each other. It's in the same paragraph. It's the same sentence, maybe. Maybe we're insinuating it because it's right there. You said it. It's written. You want to look at it? Do we need to stick your nose in it and smack you?
You know what? I think she's just being disgruntled because the Bush administration have put her book below Bob Woodward's on their website.
I think it's insidious.
She's number two and he's number one, so she's feeling a little bit put upon.
I think she is an evil... I can't say it.
Uh-huh.
She's his best attacker, anti-Democrat attacker. She is so good because she is the mom, like the soccer mom with a kind of, you know, weird taste in clothes, and she doesn't look terrifying.
Why don't you say bad? Don't say weird. Say bad. Bad taste in clothes, bad taste in hair. She looks like she's from, you know, 1982 and not even a good 1982.
Yeah, pre-mullet. But what the
kind of
the problem that I think people face with Karen Hughes and the like when it comes to abortion is that they chip away. You know, well, you don't want to, how could you be against, for example, criminalizing someone who attacks a woman who's pregnant? How can you be against making sure that if it's a 17-year-old that their parents are notified? How can you be against, 9/11 and connecting 9/11 to life and to, in other words,
I get it.
You know what I'm saying?
They're changing the cultural language around the
little
issue.
Little by little, before our very eyes.
But
they're
also changing the legal language, and they also are chipping away at someone's right to get a safe abortion. And it's like, as I said before, and we've talked about it, it's you know, it's a delicate issue in the sense that, you know, nobody wants one. You know, no one wants one. I think I believe it's a Christian right conspiracy to, provide as many, like, they want as many unwanted kids in the world as possible so they're easy to convert later, so they're lost. And
it's also about making things easy and, you know, not intellectually challenging and appealing just completely on an emotional level where you go, well, you would value life over killing somebody, wouldn't you? You know, you don't want to die in a terrorist attack, do you? And you go, well, who's going to go... I would. Of course, you're all going to say no. And then the rest of the argument doesn't make any sense gets completely obscured.
Mm,
and people don't want to have to think that much. And so it works at that level.
But the mental issue is different from the practical issue with this thing. Of course, nobody, you know...
No, the practical is dangerous. So they do that on every single thing. They do that on the environment. They do that on, you know, everything that they
No, what I mean is...
Say.
What I mean is that, you know, to talk about it and to think about it, you know, ideologically, or to think about abortion, it's disturbing, and it's easy to sort of, like, get people to say, of course, you know, that's horrible. But the thing is that, like I said, nobody wants one. And the practical issue is that you should be allowed to have one safely if you need one.
If you make that choice, absolutely. Do you remember, Marin, because you're not a kid. Sue's kind of young. Do you remember a song called I Cram to Understand?
You know, I don't.
By MC Light. This is back in the early days of rap, like the early 80s.
I don't know if I was on board with it yet.
Okay. Well, there was a song called I Cram to Understand, and I keep thinking about that when I think
called
about...
Called what, sorry?
I Cram to Understand.
I Cram to Understand.
Can you lay...
I study a lot?
No. It means... Actually, she was talking about a boyfriend, and what she's saying is, I'm working really, really hard to figure you out.
Okay.
That's what I crammed to understand.
I like it.
Well, George Bush and Dick Cheney remind me of that song.
Yeah.
Because they're sitting up cramming. Like, they got a final exam today.
They're cramming. They're cramming it into George Bush's head.
Because he's going to be the talking head. They're going before the 9/11 panel tomorrow. Keep in mind that the pair refused to meet with the panel either publicly or separately. Critics say they're appearing together to make sure they get their stories straight. While both the commission and the administration will have note takers present, there will be no transcript and no recording made of the interview.
You say no note takers?
No, there are note takers.
Right.
But there will be no transcript, written transcript, nor will there be an audio tape.
Now, can they work from notes? Because that wouldn't be fair either. George Bush is not allowed notes. He can write on his hand.
Is Bush actually cramming, or is this just a refresher course? Here's White House spokesman Scott McClellan.
The president will tell it exactly how it happened, and that's why he's going back and looking at materials that were from that time period. Remember, this is some 2.5 to 3 years ago, so he's going back to refresh his memory so that he can provide the commission with an accurate account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you see the press conference, Mr. McClellan? I mean, he forgot to say, we're hoping the president will tell it exactly as it happened and not stumble.
But these are materials that he didn't read in the first place, right? I mean, haven't we had reports over the last few weeks is that he doesn't actually like to read all this material, and that when there are intelligence briefings, supposedly every morning, he doesn't actually read stuff. Someone has to come in and orally just tick off bullet points or fill him in. He doesn't read this stuff. So I don't believe he's refreshing his memory looking at this stuff for the second or third time. I think he's looking at many of these documents for the first time, and that what we'll see is the same phrases that Condoleezza Rice used come out again and again. Right. It'll be all about that they didn't know
only
that the
slower
attacks were going to come.
We're not going
to
see anything.
At a specific time, on a date, at a place, it'll be the same old stuff.
Well, here's my question. Now, Bush is going to be the main speaker here.
The press keeps saying that. They're very implicit on saying, like, Bush is going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy.
So what substance is Cheney adding to the discussion? And if it's not that much, what's he there for?
Here's what he's there for. Wait, what he's trying to say is... or how about this one? Wait, let me cover this. Or how about this one? No, I did. Just let me do this. All right, Georgie?
Mm. When he says a la Qadaida, what he means is...
Yeah.
Now, you know, this is going to be an interesting, by Friday, we'll see whether the Bush administration actually walks away from all of these things, the Supreme Court, the 9/11 Commission, the latest developments in Iraq. Will they walk from all of this unbowed, unbloodied?
I got to call my guy about getting those tapes. I got a guy on the inside of the panel, the same guy gets me the dead bootlegs and the Lou Reed stuff.
It can be twisted to be a partisan thing all over again. People who love him will still love him. Those
still ahead.
Don't, won't.
Still ahead. Presidential daily briefing. Dream analysis with a real psychologist. So please stay with us here on Air America.
Air America Radio.
Clean it up.
You know we were kidding about helping you clean your garage, right?
You can make it fun to do, and your friends can help you too. Clean it up.
Remember the last time you bit into a sweet, crunchy apple, grilled onions and peppers, or made a fresh salad? The Harvest of Hope Foundation reminds you that many fruits and vegetables are harvested by migrant farm workers. They and their families earn their living crisscrossing our country, to work long hours in our nation's fields to bring to us a bountiful harvest of food. The Harvest of Hope Foundation is the nation's only private nonprofit foundation which raises funds exclusively to aid this most hardworking yet often invisible group of workers. We offer emergency aid to migrant families and financial assistance for education for their children. We need your donations to continue this important and unique charitable work. Check out our Harvest of Hope Foundation's website at harvestofhope.net or call toll-free 1-888-922-4673. That's harvestofhope.net or toll-free 1-888-922-4673.
At Volunteers of America, we don't just give kids a way to stay off the streets. We give them the tools they need to reach their full potential. We don't just help the elderly receive needed care. We help them live life to the fullest. We don't just provide food for homeless individuals and families. We provide job training and placement so they can buy groceries. Volunteers of America is a national organization that for over 100 years has provided programs and services that allow people to overcome their challenges to become vital members of their community. At Volunteers of America, we don't just help people. We help people help themselves. Find out how you can support the programs that are working in your community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089. That's 1-800-899-0089.
There was dirt, water, and air. And it was good. Once. Planet check.
Good news for diesel. Engine companies are developing a sit-trap filtering system so we can all breathe a little easier.
That is exactly what those environmentalists should be spending their time on.
Richard Castle, director of National Vehicle and Fuels Project for the NRDC, explains.
This is a story of government, public interest community, industry, and state and local air pollution officials all working together to solve a problem, and it's clearly working.
The EPA report shows that all the engine companies are on track to meeting the 2007 deadline.
That's great news for anybody who breathes. The fuels will be cleaner and the diesel trucks and buses will be cleaner in a few years, and that's a great news story.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check, your daily 1 minute terrestrial examination. Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Listen to Air America Radio whenever and wherever you want. We're available 24/7 on the internet. Just hit our website, www.airamericaradio.com. All you need to do is complete a quick online registration. Once that's done, you're ready to take us live. Air America uses the Real One player for our streaming. www.airamericaradio.com. Streaming now, live, 24/7. www.airamericaradio.com.
Good morning, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. It is 21 past the hour. And now it is time to look at the Presidential Daily Briefing, the highly classified, top-secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. And today's PDB from the intelligence community is titled, Are Gas Prices the New Axis of Evil? Mr. President, it has come to our attention that Alan Greenspan says the rise in energy prices may be permanent, making it an imminent threat to your presidency. Voters reach a negative contentment plateau vis-a-vis rising prices, which could later be reflected at the polls, i.e., you could lose. Further, rising costs could induce the populace to alter their daily petroleum deployment. With so-called hybrid cars, mass transportation, and other subversive conservation tactics such as bicycles or even walking. This nightmare scenario could also threaten your vast personal interests in the oil industry. Reports confirm that Vice President Cheney, whose income from Halliburton exceeds his salary at the White House, has been angrily pouting in his undisclosed bunker over these developments, declaring, quote, no one will like me when I'm poor. It is our recommendation that you counter this challenge by questioning Kerry's war medals. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security.
Mm.
Powerful stuff, right?
I must be on his hit list. I just invested $90 in a foolproof lock for my bike in New York.
You are.
Can you believe it?
I went biking yesterday.
$90 on a lock? So it was the only one that would guarantee my bike wouldn't be stolen.
Oh, wait, hold up. Nothing guarantees that your bike won't be stolen.
They'll figure it out.
Nothing. They'll figure it out,
yeah,
whatever it is.
You got to get a good luck. Now, with both campaigns focusing on each man's qualifications to serve as the military's commander-in-chief, Air America has put together a special series focusing on what each man was doing at that point in American history when their country needed them most. Right now, we present the final installment of our three-part series.
To better understand the men who would be our leaders, Air America takes a closer look at the events that shaped their lives.
December 2nd, 1968. John Kerry, patrolling the area near the Mekong Delta, gets his first taste of intense combat and is wounded in the arm. He is awarded his first Purple Heart. On that same day, half a world away, Air National Guard member George W. Bush, in a routine check of his airplane's instrument panel, accidentally ejects himself into the hangar ceiling.
Two men, two lives. Now you, the voter, must decide. Give it some thought this time.
that we heard that one already. Do we have another one, Chris, or is that the only one we got?
No, the thing is, managed to eject himself twice. He didn't learn the lesson the first time.
He's really a doofus.
That's the only conclusion I can draw from that.
So here's a good story. The GOP, the protesters who they're assuming will protest the Republican National Convention, they're thinking now that out of the 8,000 people they need to volunteer to help, you know, run the thing, that they're going to infiltrate. The protesters are going to infiltrate the volunteer force and start taking it down from the inside.
They're going to cut their hair like yours.
Yeah.
Go down to Scott McClellan's office.
Yeah, with a box of Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
With a box of Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Down.
I'm here to help, man. Where's the prez? Yeah, I don't know if they have this haircut necessarily.
Don't you think it'd be like getting on an airplane to be a volunteer? They'll ask for like two, if not three, if not four pieces of ID and fingerprinting to get through the door of that thing.
I don't know. I think it's a great thing. I love when this type of subversive action is done. I love when people plant themselves places. Like even that kid, I knew that kid. You remember the guy that did the soy bomb thing? When Dylan was on TV at the Grammys and he came out and said, it was pointless in a lot of ways, but it's just sort of interesting when people are able to sort of sneak in. It's almost like, you know, the cell structure of terrorism that, you know, that these guys.
God, here we go. You know, now you're going to say the protesters are terrorists.
No, I'm not trying to say that. I'm saying that I appreciate that sort of old school kind of like planting yourself among the enemy and sort of bringing it down from the inside. You know, that is what the original assassins were from the old. Like Hassan Isaba, the guy who had the little mosque up on it's old stuff. But the word assassin and hashish both come from Hassan Isaba's name. And the original assassins were
Which one Mark's more interested in?
But the original assassins were not guys that went in and necessarily just shot people. They were guys who were able to infiltrate within the inner court of enemy ruling power and start to work it down from the inside. I guess they call them sort of, you know, agent provocateurs now.
I love civics class from you, Mark.
Yeah, I enjoy this. And it's going to be interesting to figure out how the Republicans are going to counter this. I mean, they need the volunteers, right? They got to have these people.
There's no way they can know unless they do deep security checks, which I guess they're capable of doing. But even then, it's like, you know, if they're volunteers and they're like, but I really believe, I mean, unless they've done something wrong, there's no way they can figure it out.
Now, you want to try something real subversive?
Yeah.
Get somebody from here. Somebody. Not one of the on-air people necessarily, but somebody from here.
We should, man. We should get a spy in at the Republican National Committee. I don't think I could do it. I was told that we actually have the real third part of our series of the profiles of the Kerry and Bush.
Oh, you mean he didn't jettison himself?
Yeah, will he eject himself a third time? Stay tuned. It comes now.
To better understand the men who would be our leaders, Air America takes a closer look at the events that shaped their lives.
March 13th, 1969. A mine detonates near John Kerry's boat, wounding him in the right arm. He is awarded his third Purple Heart. He also receives a Bronze Star for retrieving a crew member who had fallen overboard amidst a firefight. On that same day, half a world away, George Bush is hosting frat brothers on the family yacht off the coast of Kennebunkport. when one of them swallows a pop-top during a chugging contest. A quick-thinking Bush kicks him in the stomach, dislodging the obstruction. 3 of 10 witnesses declare him a hero.
2 men, 2 lives. Now you, the voter, must decide. Remember, this is important.
What's a pop-top? One of those cans, one of those beers you don't need an opener for?
Yeah, a lot of people pull those off for some reason. My wife does. My wife will. Well, you know how the reason they put those on there initially was the tabs that would come all the way off. People would always stick in the can, and I guess there was a couple of people who swallowed
them. Yeah.
But my wife actually pulls the pop top thing off and sticks it in the can. I'm like, what are you, living on the edge? I mean, that's the reason they stopped doing that.
Did she do that before you were married or after? I think it's significant.
You're saying that maybe she's secretly
I'm just saying. You're driving her over the edge, man.
If I'm the edge for my wife, then it's mild. My wife is tough, man. She's been through some stuff, man.
Really?
She's a warrior.
A warrior
princess.
Okay, but not a war president.
No, not a war president. She's just like, you know, she had some fun, my wife, in her day.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
And she knows about the fun you had in your day.
She knows it all.
Really?
She knows everything. You know, it's complete disclosure.
This presidency. They have a full disclosure.
Has she been talking to Jack Rice or something?
Yes. She knows way too much. Jack Rice, the CIA officer who is always watching me. We have him on the show occasionally.
That was pathetic.
No, we do. My wife got really tired. You got to tell them everything at some point because they get tired of hearing, oh, you know that girl? Yeah.
Oh, really?
Didn't you have that when you first got married? When your wife was, when you tell them about people that you were with before them, and they're like, how many are there?
No, I only had one situation, one time. I took my wife to the movies, and I ran into an old friend of mine in the movie. And as we were coming out, he looked at her with a straight face and said, you're going out with him?
Oh, man.
That was almost the end of that. Coming up, the most dangerous segment of our broadcast day. Mark Maron's dream diary will be examined by a professional. And if that weren't enough, we'll talk to you on the phones. We'll be right back here on Air America Radio.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. United Nations envoy Lakhdar Brahimi has laid out his blueprint for a new caretaker government in Iraq. Among the things he's calling for is the removal of political aspirations by anyone involved in the caretaker government to clear the way for a level playing field when general elections are called for next year. President Bush and Vice President Cheney are preparing themselves for their long-awaited appearance tomorrow before the nonpartisan investigative panel into the 9/11 attacks. Both will appear together as requested in details of their testimony will not be made available to the media. And a published report this morning says that California Congresswoman Jane Harman may get the nod to be the running mate of Democratic presidential contender John Kerry. The 58-year-old ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee is widely admired for her knowledge of foreign policy, defense, and terrorism issues. Some believe she may just be the candidate to create a media splash for Kerry with regard to diversity and strengthen the ticket over the Republicans on their war on terror. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
I was born completely healthy, but when I was 10 months old, I caught a virus that attacked my heart.
Lacey wouldn't have lived without a heart transplant. Today, she is a normal, healthy teenager.
That heart transplant saved my life. Now, I'm 14, and I'm just starting high school. Some of the things I like to do are volleyball, basketball, drumming, snowboarding, dancing. I can't stand sitting around. My philosophy is to never waste a minute because of this wonderful gift I've gotten.
Lacey is one of hundreds of thousands of people who've been given the chance to live because someone else chose to be an organ and tissue donor.
I don't think about my transplant that often, but if I didn't have it, I wouldn't be here right now. My parents don't treat me any differently. They just treat me like a normal kid, because I am.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to www.donatelife.net.
I'm Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio with Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Lately, you've noticed Mark Maron has been sharing with us the contents of his dream diary every morning. And we've begun to worry that maybe some of his dreams suggested that he might have some, well, how should we put it, serious problems. So joining us now, we have a real psychologist who has a private practice right here in New York City, Dr. Nando Pelosi.
Hi, thank you.
You might, if you've, as I know you have, listened to have some of his dreams, have figured out that Mark has some, how shall I put it, issues. Before we go to a dream, I'm wondering whether you might just pinpoint a couple of them that you think stand out.
Well, a couple of things he talked about were this dream of Carrie spinning around and round. It's a good thing it wasn't Elvin Bishop. That would have been a real problem.
Okay.
We're going to listen to that
why
one.
Don't, why don't we, maybe you could pinpoint, you know, insecurity, paranoia, anything that stands out before we go to the dreams. I will play that.
I think you're leading him a little bit.
Oh, really? Am I? I thought this was my chance, finally, to
Well, at first
believe.
I thought there might be some indication that there was a woman trapped in a hipster's body.
Oh.
Interesting. Okay, I think we should go to a dream right now. Let's go to the dream, Chris.
All right, here we go. Now, let me try and read my writing. I'm on a patrol boat in Vietnam. It's incredibly hot, and I'm wearing camo face paint, right? The Stones are playing Satisfaction. John Kerry is on deck with me, all right? He has a huge purple heart hanging around his neck, and he's, like, dancing around in circles, and he's sweating. And every time he spins around, he's wearing more medals, every time. And the boat is sort of listing because the medals, it keeps getting heavier and heavier, and he's, like, you know, he's being, like, the boat is actually sinking because of the medals, and he's laughing, and he yells at me. He yells, "I released all my military records, man, and it freaks me out." And then his head just melts into gibberish. I don't even know what that means, but it's kind of poetic.
Is that
then,
little letters?
Yeah, just
pouring
like,
out of his head.
Yeah, it was. You know how in dreams you can't describe things, right? All right. Okay. Then I'm in a helicopter. Okay. And I'm flying over a rice paddy with John McCain. All right. And so I scream in slow motion, "Is this man electable?" And McCain screams, "He's all we've got. Give him a chance." And then he breaks apart into several small John McCains, and they start jumping out of the helicopter. All right. Then I'm back on the boat like a month later. We arrive at a scary outdoor party, and Kerry takes a machete out and cuts Bush in half in a ritual slaying, and the blood is everywhere. The horror. The horror. Then I wake up. My sheets were tied in knots, hanging out the window. My alarm clock was upside down, and I was covered in blood and sweating.
Okay, Dr. Nando, that was Mark's dream from last week. But what, in your professional opinion, would you say that Mark is really struggling with?
Well, the thing with the slaying of Bush in half, that's a standard Halliburton party trick. So that just keeps skull and bones members in line.
They do that, yeah. So that was sort of my ESP kind of prophecy element, that the third eye was open deal.
That sounds like something like that, yeah. But a team of psychologists is probably what I recommend. The father figure of Kerry spinning around could be, his saying, "Why don't you get a real job?
Hey.
Yeah.
I think we're interested in long-term therapy here.
Maybe, yeah. No, but my real view, though, is that dreams are sort of a screensaver for the mind. You know, it's not something that really denotes anything real, but what we think about them is more interesting, because that tells us what our philosophies and our thoughts are.
Well, listen to this
one.
This was today, man. Okay, today, I read this earlier, all right? So here's how it starts. My dream, like, I'm in a studio, I'm right here, I'm doing this show, but instead of the two, like, Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott, there's just two more of me, okay? And there's me in there in the booth listening to me, and I assume all the audiences, it's all me, right? And I'm killing, I'm getting laughs, laugh after laugh after laugh, and the only guy that's not laughing is the one guy who's not me, and it's Charlie Kaufman, the film director who directed The Being John Malkovich.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he's sitting there going, "You hack, you stole my stuff," right? All right. And then, so I'm doing the dream diary, and somehow I know it's weird because I'm dreaming about remembering about dreaming about remembering, and I start to get really confused, and then suddenly this figure in a white lab coat and with a polished aluminum orb for a head bursts in and goes, "I see you." Okay, and he said it in, a robot-y voice. And he goes, and I go, "Get out. This is my playhouse. This is all me in here." And he goes, "I see you." And he says it again, and I go, "No, you don't. I'm invisible. You'll never catch me." And I start running through a tunnel filled with silver fog, and then into a room full of mirrors, and he goes, "I see you." And I try to run, but I keep smashing into a reflection of myself until all the mirrors are smeared with blood, but it's like orange, and it's It's singing.
Now,
okay, Dr. Nando Paluzzi, New York psychologist, do your stuff on that.
Okay, what that indicates to me is we need about several years of therapy. But no, honestly, I
don't you guys always say that?
Yeah.
It's a money thing, isn't it? It's $150 for the rest of your life.
It's just
every
a standard
week.
Default.
That's hilarious. So, like, the first meeting, like, this is our first appointment. You're like, wow, man. What are you doing every day next week?
Not true. No, I do brief therapy. But here's one thing I want to know is where's Elvin Bishop in that dream?
What was that, man? Could you, Elvin Bishop? If you're just tuning in, it's like I keep waking up in the morning with absolutely nothing on my mind but some sort of weird esoteric classic hit, and I am blaming it on. Can it be?
It's a great song.
Fool around and fell in. Yeah, love. Yeah, but why that song? And every morning it's a different classic hit out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I have mercury in my brain from all the salmon I eat because I'm trying to stay alive. But I think the precious metal in my head is picking up a classic hit station, and I want to know: can I change the channel? Do you know anything about this?
Well,
Dr. Nando, do you think Mark's happy?
Well, is there something you're hiding?
Uh-oh.
About my past?
That, yeah.
About Elvin Bishop?
Yeah. Is there something we should know about that?
There's some embarrassing moments about my past that has to do with classic hits. Wow. Now all of a sudden, like, how much do I need to disclose? You know, I don't know if I'm hiding anything, but there was some weird things that happened during classic hits in my past. Maybe that is a good point. Because I'm sleeping, you're saying maybe I'm having flashbacks from, you know, maybe past strange sexual things that happened in the back seats of cars when I was in junior high or high school.
Well, anything with Elvin Bishop's looks.
Overall. Yeah, that's weird, man. I was really attracted to fat men in overalls wearing cowboy hats. I never really want to talk about it.
He sort of had a curly-haired mullet.
Yeah, he had like this weird mullety. He was a real dude. I think he played for the Mike Bloomfield. He played for Paul Butterfield Blues Band, for a while. Band, yeah. But by the time we got to know him, my best friend in high school's name was Dave Bishop. And he had long, curly, blonde hair, and he died tragically. You know, maybe I'm feeling some sadness. I don't know.
Well, that's possible. You know,
where are you trying to go with this? You're trying to say that maybe it's Bishop and it's sort of like the chess piece Bishop, and I'm sort of repressing some sort of strange
is there some religious
psycho
issue there?
Sexual homoerotic thing?
Bishop. I think you can do self therapy, Mark.
I spend a lot of time.
Why waste the money on seeing someone?
What about religious thing? Is that what you're saying?
Possibly, but you know, I do a cognitive behavioral therapy, which really doesn't look at dreams per se, but I'll do it, you know, for the goof. But,
okay. Here comes the self plug.
is your relationship with religion complicated?
How about torture?
Let's start with complicated.
I tend to fight God. I tend not to believe in God, and I tend to
who wins.
You know, right now, how I usually fight, I go, it doesn't exist, and you're not paying attention to me. And then at that point, I go, and I don't believe in you at all, so I win. You see how that works?
And exactly whom do you not believe in?
You know, the...
Right.
Me.
Right. Hate to bring you down.
Does everybody always cry? Does everybody always cry in their first session with you, Dr. Nando?
That's a success. Somebody cried. No.
Is that the inner child thing going on here?
Possibly. Again, that's another thing I don't look at is the inner child, because it's hard enough dealing with the inner adult.
What about, I don't mean to sternize the show, but what about, you know, how much is too much masturbating, really? Honestly.
That was pathetic.
Let's just say, if you were doing it right now on the show or in the room with us, Mark, that would be too much.
Yeah, that would be a marker right there.
But like once a day, twice a day, how much? Too much.
I don't think there is a
no rule.
Too much. Depends on
not too much. Look at Chris, the board guy. We both go yes, we're good.
Physiologically, it can't be too much.
Great.
If it's interfering with your driving or your work, it's definitely too much.
I'll tell you one thing though, is that usually what we masturbate about is sort of a supernormal stimulus, something that didn't exist in our natural environment.
Yes.
You know, so now you have the internet or something like that.
Yes.
Which you can feed yourself with a chronic
no
influx.
You ain't telling me.
And that could become a problem.
So I'd say it's addictive.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for helping out.
I'd say 25 years of therapy, and then we'll definitely clear it up.
Well, hang out. We're gonna take calls.
Thank you. I'd like to take you aside after the show.
Okay. We're going to take calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Dr. Nando is going to be hanging out with us, and we'll talk to you about whatever you want right here on Air America.
America Radio. Talk radio you don't have to yell at.
We are ready for any unforeseen event which may or may not happen.
I recognize there are hurdles, and we're going to achieve those hurdles.
It will take time to restore chaos and order.
Some call those Bushisms, but we think it translates to George W., you're fired. He's the most powerful man in the free world and your elected leader, but it's time to show George W. exactly how you feel. George W., you're fired. That's right. Get your George W., you're fired t-shirt today and start spreading the word. High quality, 100% cotton, various designs, available in every size. It's time to get the word out and support the upcoming Democratic run to the White House. And what better way to show America your convictions than on the front of your chest? Visit www.wyourfired.com. That's www.wyourfired.com and order yours today.
Hi, I want to thank you for remembering to recycle, and I want to let you know the recycling program has been completely restored. Every week we're now collecting glass bottles and jars, along with plastic bottles and jugs, metal cans, aluminum foil, beverage cartons, and drink boxes. And don't forget to recycle your mixed paper and corrugated cardboard. Just set out recyclables in clear bags or your recycling containers. If you have any questions or need container decals, please call 311. Thanks for doing your part, New York.
Since the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air, and it was good. Once, Planet Check. Planet Check.
Last year, Mounted Meadows became quite concerned, as I think a lot of other ski areas are in the country, about the possible influence of global warming on our viability as a business.
That's Mount Hood Meadows Sustainability Manager, Stuart Watson.
So we thought we would take some initiatives to demonstrate our concern about that and hope to motivate other people to take similar actions.
Mount Hood gives the planet a lift with green-powered chair.
So we went out and bought enough green tags from the Bonneville Environmental Foundation to power two of our major chair lifts this year.
By taking this positive action, Mount Hood Meadows Ski Resort prevented 256 tons of greenhouse gases.
This is just totally awesome.
The purchase of green tags makes Mount Hood Meadows the third in the country among ski areas for support of renewable energy. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Circle of Life and We the Planet. www.circleoflife.org, where consciousness is cool.
Hi, this is Joe Elliott from Def Leppard for RAD, Recording Artists Against Drunk Driving. Planning on going out and having a party? Great, have a lot of fun. But do me a big favor and don't blow it. Always choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives. You should too.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
So what else is news?
When I was chief speechwriter to Vice President Walter Mondale, I wrote a lot of foreign policy speeches. We did a lot of foreign travel.
Air America's Marty Kaplan.
I must say, never once during that did I think of what we were up to as brand management. But that's what public diplomacy has become.
Marty Kaplan, evening 7 to 8 on Air America Radio.
Good morning, Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott, Mark Riley, and Dr. Nando Pelosi.
He's not David. Bandor.
Yeah, great name. Bandor. Nando Pelosi. Dr. He's Prince, a psychopolitical non-Freudian analyst, a cognitive therapist. The number here is 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. Question for Dr. Nando. Now, as a cognitive therapist, which means you assess people's behavior, and as you were saying off mic before, people's philosophies about themselves,
right.
Which I find very interesting. My, what about the relationship between President Bush and Dick Cheney? Now, they seem sort of inseparable. They are going to be testifying before the panel together. How do you assess that relationship?
See, I think that might indicate true love and commitment, something that sometimes liberals are a little bit cynical about.
Uh-huh.
But
is it codependent? Do you believe in those terms?
Yeah, those are could be useful terms, sure.
Yeah.
One reason why I think they're testifying together is it's part of the No Child Left Behind Act.
That's good. That's good. 866-303-AAR0 is our number. Chris in Connecticut, you're on the Air America phone.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Well, first off, I just want to tell you, first, I am a liberal Republican,
mm-hmm.
okay, which is, you know, a lot of people say it's total controversy of, you know, of terms, but I think you're totally wrong as far as the No Child Left Behind, even though that is good. But I think the Cheney-Bush testifying relationship is a little bit more like Knucklehead and Paul Winchell.
Oh, wow, you're going back now. None yeah. of these guys remember that.
I know, but, you know, but you guys remember that. That's
I remember that. Paul, yes.
Yeah, what is that?
I don't remember that. Sorry.
It's a cartoon show. It's not a cartoon show. It was a show that was on television for kids. Back in the 50s.
A ventriloquist act.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, right. Paul, and then there was, who's the other ventriloquist? Edgar Bergen
and yeah. Charlie McCarthy. But,
Yeah, so, I could definitely see that. That's a completely perfect way to assess their relationship. It was brought to my attention by my producer that in my little fury of dream and telling, I said Charlie Kaufman was a director, and I know he's not a director, he's a writer. So if you made note of that and judged me for it,
hey, he was out of his agent getting extra money now.
Yeah, right.
He ruined his chances.
Sigmund in Austria.
Yeah, guten Tag.
Come on.
This cognitive behavioral is not the answer. You have to go to psychoanalysis.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, Mark, what the problems are.
Okay, all right.
The dreams reveal a repetition compulsion.
Yes.
This tired stick from the stage act transferring to the radio.
Uh-huh.
Very tired.
Uh-huh.
And we also call it a transference.
Yeah, I know that one.
Steal from the transference, stealing the jokes from the other comics.
Yeah.
Guilty there.
Uh-huh.
So you mean, take a sleeping pill, you'll be fine.
Thank you very much.
A sleeping pill.
Well,
so he said the repetition from the stage act to, which I don't do, but and he referred to the Charlie Kaufman thing. That's it. Wait, is that guy really calling from Austria?
Yeah, Austria, New Hampshire. I don't know. Was he?
Sigmund believes in the Freudian thing. See, you know,
yeah,
and we
look at more of the practical thing. Like, for example, maybe Cheney just wants to get out of the undisclosed location once in a while.
Uh huh.
Or Bush, you know, sees Cheney as he's my right hand man.
Yeah,
it my left hand?
Right. But I don't think he'd be left. would be a left hand. Steve, are you there, Steve?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, man, what's up?
I think you shouldn't be so harsh and critical of Republicans because you wouldn't, it's just their nature. You would never criticize a crocodile or an alligator for taking down an antelope or a reindeer. That's just their nature. That's how they are, Republicans.
That's it. Thank you for the interesting analogy from the animal kingdom.
I see that as another potential client.
Okay. The number is 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. So tell us a little bit about how cognitive therapy works as opposed to Freudian therapy, which you seem to not believe really is appropriate anymore necessarily.
Yeah, well, in Manhattan it's alive and well, but
right.
in the rest of, especially in the scientific community, it's not. And
mm-hmm.
it's largely a focus on your past, things you really can't change, whereas in the cognitive approaches, you look at your philosophies and sometimes things you tell yourself, like right now you might be telling yourself something like, what's this guy talking about, you know, or whatever it is,
yeah.
it's in your head.
Yeah.
But sometimes you don't tune into it. And so I have you look into it and explicate it.
Uh-huh.
We collaborate on your goals, and sometimes we defeat ourselves by the things we think, and we may not even realize we operate under certain philosophies.
Yeah, I'm starting to realize that more and more about myself.
Well, that's good.
Self-awareness
can
is
I
good,
bill,
right?
Can I bill for that?
Yeah, you can bill for whatever you want.
Doesn't mean I'll pay it.
Nah. You know what? I'm still sitting here thinking about, who's that guy who called from Austria, man? What was up with that guy? What was he saying about me and where I come from? Because he must have been some sort of comic of some sort, putting on the fake Austrian voice, making judgments about me, Mark Maron, on the radio, saying I rehashed comedy material from my act on the radio, which I don't, but I did at the beginning, and now I'm out.
They took
I'm out of my act. So for the past week or so, it's been fresh off the press, my friend.
Mm.
And also the
And also the other thing is I never hacked or stole nothing from nobody. So you can take your hacky German accent and stick it in your hacky head. Head?
Yes. Wow.
Dr. Nanda, which therapy makes us happier? Which one would benefit us more?
I think the cognitive is briefer, so just in
cheaper.
That sense. And cheaper in the long run. Yeah.
We got a guy from South Dakota calling. I think we got to take it. Rich in South Dakota. Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. What's up?
Well, I just think every talking head on the Sunday morning talk shows there should ask every politician how we can justify giving Iraq back to the Iraqis when we haven't disposed of the weapons of mass destruction yet.
I thought we were under the impression that there might not be any there, Rick.
Well, I'd like to have every one of them say that for 10 months like they said it, before the war for 10 months. That
right.
We've got to go in and do this right now.
Oh, just so they'll repeat that there isn't any there?
Yeah. I like to watch them squirm. I had a Republican that I was talking to, and he debated for about 5 minutes and then finally just blurted out, they never were there.
I think that's a good point, because I think the repetition is how they make people believe what they want them to believe, and maybe the repetition of the truth in terms of the weapons of mass destruction might actually change the cultural and national dialogue around that. Good suggestion, Rich. Got Chris in Connecticut.
Yeah, I'm calling, responding to the other Chris from Connecticut. The ventriloquist act that Bush and Cheney most closely resemble is not Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. It's maybe Roy Cohn and Joseph McCarthy, or possibly Richard Nixon and Joseph McCarthy.
Excellent. That's it. Right.
I've been wondering about doing something like 6 degrees of separation, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, tracing the line of evil from one administration to the next.
It's pretty easy. There's some of the same guys in the administration.
I know. I was wondering if you guys could, put together some kind of a segment on that,
All right. It's a good suggestion. We'll look into it, Chris. Thanks. Obviously, applying for a writing job here.
Is that the number?
Yeah.
1-866-303-AAR0. 1-866-303-2270.
Larry in Long Island, what's going on?
Good morning.
Hi.
I wanted to find out if anybody had figured out what the seating arrangements would be at the 9/11 Commission hearings when Knucklehead and Cheney are there.
Well, I'm guessing Knucklehead will be at the children's table, right?
Well, I was thinking that Knucklehead may sit on Cheney's lap.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme, man. Thanks for your call, Larry.
Rachel Mahoney time. That's what that was called.
Jason, North Carolina.
Hey, just wanted to see what you guys thought about the chemical weapons that were found in Syria heading to Jordan. They came from Iraq.
Wait, when did that happen? Today?
Yesterday.
I read a story about that, but have they verified that they actually came from Iraq?
That's what the news crews are reporting.
When we went to press today, it was not a confirmed story.
But okay. There is other news out of Syria today, and that's that there was a bomb near a cluster of foreign embassies in Damascus, the Syrian capital, and that the Syrian officials think that could have been caused by a terrorist and sabotage group, and there were also some attacks over in Thailand, which also kind of have Muslim connections. So things not looking good.
Oh, man. I didn't hear about that. So where do they think these weapons came from?
Are you asking me where the weapons came from? Yeah. I don't know where the weapons came from. I mean, was the caller suggesting that they were planted there?
I don't know what he was suggesting.
No, he was saying they came from it. The report that I saw said that there were allegations that there had been weapons of mass destruction transshipped from Iraq into Syria, apparently on their way to Jordan. It's not the first time I've heard that story.
Right, though. No, that's been around.
And nobody's been able to verify any of it that I know of.
Yeah, it's like this old sort of myth that maybe the weapons are all in Syria.
They
wouldn't have been able to see them moving all the weapons across. Don't we have satellites and planes and spy planes and people watching this stuff?
There are people watching us, I guarantee you.
Powell was just in Syria making sure that they were kind of on board and supporting their efforts in Iraq. So
he brought them over.
Thank goodness for Barbara.
There's the facts with today's liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. These are the liberal marching orders for today. Get your pencils out and make note. 1, sign petition to keep it safe and legal for animals to eat their young. 2, have a second DVD player installed in the SUV to stop kids bickering in the back seat. 3, snicker knowingly at country folk on TV. 4, consider marrying a gay illegal immigrant so they can be a citizen and you can have insurance. 5, tell your children that their lemonade stand would do better if the government regulated them more and raised their taxes. 6, lobby to have the KISS Army put under the direct supervision of the UN. The KISS Army. There you go. Brendan's clapping. He was part of the KISS Army. Attend a Children of Friends of Parents with Gay Teens support group. 8, take drugs while baby roots through medicine cabinet. 9, take God out of everything we haven't already taken God out of, including the phrases, God, it's hot, and God, shut up, and God, I could really use a cigarette. What about, oh, God? Yeah, that's yeah. That was pathetic. Oh, God, as well. Thank you, Dr. Nando Pelosi, for being with us and helping me out with some of my deeper problems. Thank you, Sue.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you. And Mark and Sue, I had a great time.
Did I help with any of your problems? I think I did. I think I caused some.
Well, wait till you show up in one of my dreams.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, okay. You wouldn't tell us.
Join us tomorrow on Air America Radio when we'll have a network exclusive behind closed doors at the 9/11 panel. What Bush and Cheney are saying. And we'll have former White House spokesman Joe Lockhart help us understand what's actually going on tomorrow. That's tomorrow's morning's edition here on Air America Radio.
This is the sound of grubs, eating machines destroying your lawn. They eat and eat and eat. End the destruction all season. With Bayer Advanced season-long grub control with Merit, one application protects your yard in two ways, killing more grubs than any other product, plus providing season-long protection against future grub problems. Guaranteed. No wonder Merit from Bayer is the number one choice of professionals. Bayer Advanced. Better thinking, better results.
Hi, I'm Edward James Olmos. I'm here to talk to you about RAD, Recording Artists, Actors, and Athletes Against Drunk Driving. Think about it. You have choices that you can make in your life. Good choices and bad ones. Drinking and driving, bad choice. Why? The life you may take may even be your own. Think about it. Drinking and driving doesn't mix. Get a designated driver.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
Hey, this is Rachel from Unfiltered on Air America Radio, where we promise you news and opinions you will not hear anywhere else, including on the rest of the network. It's unfiltered at airamericaradio.com. That's our email address. We always love to hear from you. I'll be back in just a second with Chuck D and Liz Winstead right after news from Air America Radio.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning.